Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's poppin'? This is Casanova Rudd, and you're tuned in to GQ Palace.
You never really noticed me. Now all of a sudden you wanna talk to me. Just because you see me doing big things, baby. Take a picture. Without the fame, I'ma still be me. Whether the streets or I'm on TV, we in the rock or we'll be VIP.
Sharp Cannon Kodak, Top Coat Cashmere, Will Camo Kojak, wrist and neck, drip drop, clip pop, hold that, Roman, hand up, stand up, know that, wasn't always rosé, click at Viva, Miami for the weekend, eating, Shima, pull up, valet park car, Bima, remember being flat broke till I had Enoch, had to get my change up, change up, like a flat tire side of the road, the right time with the right grind, climbing the roads, rock diamonds to glow, ice blinding the shows, heard lights to slide in the hole, it's my way or the highway. Iron the toe, yes, I'm a pro. Press iron the foes, talking what I walk, talk, never the foe. Yeah,
you never really noticed me. Now all of a sudden you wanna talk to me. Just because you see me doing big things, baby.
Chick like who him, in the low bubble, trouble with the low brim, running no huddle, double the score, Tom Brady, Mercedes, huddle the floor, won't settle with all, middle finger the loss, parquet, bread and butter, but I hunger for more, look closer, I'm the one you tried to ignore, mimosas, what I said, starting my mom, while these other niggas playing, Q playing the show, beachfront, she can front if she want, trust. Cause never will I change my course or rearrange my thoughts to be arranged in court. But no game, it's public. I'm no lame, know how to get dough, get low, the flow flame. My desire's fire, saliva, propane. Q, turn it up, flick, the bitch is always the same. Yeah.
You never really noticed me. Now all of a sudden you wanna talk to me. It's just because you see me doing big things, baby.
Big Chris Wallace, any night, take flight, St. Thomas, first class recliner, wine and empanadas, stay sky high, call the frequent flyer mileage, touchdown land, couple grand like Cuba, six shirt cooler, something like Zamunda, blue water, white sand, Ronas in the cooler, Q, Mr. Dos Equis, come correctly, chilling crushed linen, mocha loafers, Giuseppe's, huh, they told me that it can't be done, so why I'm feeling like a champion, thought you was fancy, huh, yes you drew like Nancy Dunn, shed a tip for every lap he run, real rap, cause on track, he L Cappy son. Hand out, can't hand you none. Guess it happens, lights, camera, action, one. Deuces.
You never really noticed me. Now all of a sudden you wanna talk to me. It's just because you see me doing big things, baby.
All right, Dons and Divas, how y'all doing this evening? I'm your host, Rich Money, and welcome back to another episode of GQ Palace Radio. Before we get started, I want to take this time out and thank the man above, because without him, none of this would be possible. Now, last weekend, we had a great show. We had Jeff Cook with the GQ General Question. We had up-and-coming artist Trini letting us know what's going on with him. And we had promoter Flowway from On The Rocks Entertainment also in the building, filling us in on his promotional feel and how he was doing things. And for the last part of our segment last week, we had the real Untamed Talent in a place. He had this little poem, and the poem he recited, it was something so serious that y'all had to really hear it. So if you missed last week's show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com and type in GQ Palace. That's GEEQUE Palace, and check out the archives. Now, tonight, we have another spectacular show for y'all. We have Bill Phillips from Long Island with the GQ General Question. We have up-and-coming artist LVM in the building, and we'll be playing their smashing single, Hooked on You. After LVM, we have Mina Long, Vice President for BX Records, letting us know what's going on with her. And we're going to also be talking about her organization, Mink. After Mina, we have author David L. And he's going to let us know what's going on with his novels. Excuse me, y'all. Excuse me, I apologize. It's going on with his novels that's sweeping the nation. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back with Bill Phillips and his GQ General Question. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's Bud, baby.
Give me $20, give me $20, give me $20.
right, Dons and Divas, welcome back. And with me right now, I have Bill Phillips. Bill, welcome to the show. Bill, are you there?
Yes, sir. Hey. Yes, sir. Richie, it's good to hear your voice again.
Yeah. How's everything going, Bill?
It's going good.
Okay. You know, I really want to thank you for taking the time out, you know, to join us this evening.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, would you like to let the listeners know a little something about yourself?
Yeah. First of all, I'm a deacon in the church. I'm also a teacher, an instructor. I teach mentally high-functioning, mentally challenged adults. I teach them about life skills, the community, and stuff like that. It's part of my job. I do have a daughter. She's doing great. I pray every day that, you know, she continues to do good and nothing happens to her. I also live out in Riverhead.
Okay.
I do a lot of things for the community and the church, and life has changed and for the better, and I thank God every day.
That's what we all need. Every time we wake up, thank the man upstairs.
Oh, it's a blessing.
Yes, it is. Now, what's your topic for this evening?
My topic for this evening is why do we as black men challenge other black men?
Okay. Why do we as black men challenge other black men? Now, what made you choose that specific topic to discuss this evening?
You know, with the economy the way it is, and with everybody knows that the po-po is destroying us, so why do we need to challenge us, or challenge other people that look like us, kill our own kind, especially our men? You know, we should be standing up forward and moving forward and being creative and leading our families. But instead, we're robbing each other, we're killing each other. You know, we're trying to belittle each other and I don't understand that. You know, 80% of the news is all black men doing this, black men doing that. You know, and I don't understand that. You know, so I'd like to hear from other black men, you know, what are their ideas? You know, what's going on with black men challenging other black men instead of lifting them up, you know, and encouraging them, you know, bringing our brothers down.
That's serious. It's real serious. All right, Dons and Divas, phone lines are now open. The number to call, 646-200-3838. Press 1 to go on the line to give your point of view on Bill's topic or stay on the line to hear the show. Why black men challenge black men? Now, it depends on how you state in that, Bill. That's what I mean. You mean now... Physically, mentally,
You know, usually when it starts off mentally, there's always something physically afterwards, you know. But to have it done mentally, and it always starts at first mentally, you know, challenging them by their appearance, their stance in front of the next brother, it wears a brother down, you know, and there's no need for that. You know, I go to these meetings out in Brooklyn, and... Namaste. The God in me recognizes the God in you. You know, namaste. Instead of, you know, that's the N word. Let's use a different N word. Instead of using nigger, let's use namaste. And that's the God in me recognizes the God in you. You know, so let's change up some of these words. Let's change up some of these letters. And let's be positive about ourselves, about our brother that looks like us.
Well, I definitely agree with you on that. We have a call on the line, so we're going to bring that caller in first, and we're going to discuss this, you know, your topic for this evening. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
You
have Bill Phillips on the line.
Say thank you, T.T. Fox, for having me on tonight. It's a pleasure, as always. Why do black men challenge other black men? I think, in my opinion, it's a lack of knowledge, wisdom, understanding. once you know yourself and where you came from, you know what I mean? It's confidence. I mean, a lot of men these days don't even know who they are, where they go to. It's like crabs in the barrel. You know what I mean? Just fighting to get to the top. You don't know where the top is. You know what I'm saying? Just keep it simple. It's lack of knowledge, man. These guys don't know who they are. Know who you are. Once you identify yourself, you can identify the next black man because we all the same, basically. We're just different in levels of education and knowledge. But that's where you're supposed to be. You plan like that. We all taught different levels so that we can teach each other. And without that knowledge understanding, you're lost.
So your main statement on it is you mainly feel like it's a jealousy thing.
Yeah. Please. I'm sorry, Brother Richard. I didn't get the brother's name. What was his name?
His name is Bill. Bill, you there?
His name is Bill Offer. My name is Bill Forster. His name is Bill Offer?
No, my name is Joseph.
No, his name is Joseph, Bill.
Okay, Joseph. Man, I'm glad you said that. And I agree with you, lack of knowledge. But what do you think about the upbringing, a person's upbringing? You know, how he was brought up in his home. Maybe a single mom or a stepdad that always beating him down and stuff like that. What do you think about that?
Yo, I think that has a lot to do with it too, because I don't, you know, it's a good question, because somewhere along the line, things got really lost when it comes, you know, to parenthood, you know, morals and things like that. Because I'm sure you're an older person, when we was coming up and before our parents, when they was kids, we had to be taught morals. Somewhere we just got lost. I can't really answer that question. I don't
want to
take a guess on.
Well, I didn't hear that, but the question, Bill's question for this evening. Question he just recently asked.
Repeat that.
Bill, Joseph just said he can't answer the question. Is he referring to the question you just asked, or the question for your topic?
The question he just asked.
Okay, I missed that question. Could you repeat that question for me, Bill?
Yes. I asked him about the upbringing. I also feel that part of a lot of the upbringing has a lot to do with it also. I just want to know if you agree with that.
Oh, yes, I do agree. Yes. I heard something.
Upbringing it plays its course.
Yes.
I'm going to say that. It plays its course in that situation, because you have some families in the black nationality where they teach the man, all right, listen, somebody hits you, hit them back. There's no conversation by any means necessary. You do what you got to do, and that's it. So that's the way they grow up thinking, you understand? Because you got some black guys out here, you know, they'll be like, they don't want to talk, you understand? There's nothing to discuss. They don't want to talk about anything. And that's the arrogant mentality.
So not expressing a person, for that person not to express their emotions. You think that has a lot, and I'm just asking because you know what? I'm learning. I'm still learning, and I see a lot of brothers that, as you just said, won't say nothing, and that anger is still built up inside. And by them not speaking about it, they walk around with that gun on their hip, with that knife in their hand, and ready to kill somebody in a heartbeat.
But you know, you know what's bad about that situation, because that don't only come from the home; it also comes from, I think in that situation, a lot of it comes from the home. I'm sorry. A lot of it comes from the home in that situation, because society plays its part. But when you got somebody that's just constantly angry all the time, that has to do with the home environment. Me personally. So my thing is, their mentality is not to talk to the person or whatever. Who knows? It could go back to where they was with their parents. It could go back to them being abused. Mentally, physically, emotionally, you understand? So it could take its course way back to the point of why that black man is acting like that.
Yes, it's in there. I agree with you on that. It's a lot of emotional and physical abuse, definitely, because a lot of it starts in the home, but I think the majority starts most happens in the street, because if you're being mentally and physically abused at home, you go to the street to look for that, you know, for that love that you're so missing. And you're so emotionally scarred that the love that you get from the streets, you think is right, is actually wrong. For example, like you join a gang, So we love you, my holy. What I got, you got. And whatever they can get, they won't take it because they ain't been giving them their home. So, you know.
I definitely agree with you. We have a call on the line. Listeners, if y'all want to go on the air, press 1 to go on the air, or you can just stay on the line and hear the show. We have another call on the line. We're going to bring them on. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you have Bill Phillips on the line.
Hi, Mr. Phillips, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Who am I speaking with?
I'm good, thank you. Ms. Lavina.
Oh, hello, how are you?
Good, good. I heard the topic, and I think that it comes from the upbringing. You know, I believe that if, you know, when you're raising children and as we're growing up and as we're still growing now as adults, I think that a lot of the stuff that if we were taught when we were younger, it would be easier to communicate, you know, with someone of the same sex. I know your topic is black men, but I'm speaking like just people in general. You know, I think that, you know, when you're growing up, if you're taught how to communicate first and how to praise the person next to you, regardless of how you might feel about them, if they're doing something right or they're saying something right, then you should praise that person. So I think that, to me, I think it starts up, you know, it starts home, you know, when we're young and we're growing up. I think that's when it starts.
So you mainly feel it has nothing to do with society at all?
I think that when you're raising children, we're raising our children before society gets to raise our children. So when they start as little kids, you know, before they even go into school, you know, to me, that's the time to start, you know, not molding them, but kind of molding them to do the right thing, you know, and to show and to guide them. I think that as they get older, then it's more society. But if you start raising them correctly from the beginning when they're younger, I think that, you know, it's a strong background and the parents are really, like, not strict, but they're on top of what their kids are doing and who their friends, who their kids are communicating with, stuff like that. I think that if that's done and it's done to the point where there's still an open line of communication as well as discipline to your kids, I think that it starts when they're young.
So you're saying that the upbringing should be a lot stronger than society itself. As long as I train or teach my child and I'm there with them and I'm teaching them and I'm banging this in their head, not giving them the fear, but giving them the understanding of knowledge and who we are and what we do as a family. And once they're on their own, that there's no fear. They don't have to worry about society taking advantage of them or walk around angry or frustrated all the time.
But you know,
to me, if I'll go back to saying, if you raise your child to do the right thing and you should not walk around fearing anybody, you know, there should be not one person except for the man upstairs that can put fear in your heart that can make you mumble a word. But when it comes down to, you know, raising your child, yes, you're supposed to be the person that your child can come to. When you're raising your child one way and they go out into society and society is trying to drag them into something else, if you have a good communication between you and your child is going to tell you. And that's you as the parent. Now that's up to you to explain, well, this is why so-and-so might have said this. You know, don't be biased about it, but it's up to you to continue educating them. I think that as parents, the education for ourselves and for our kids, that doesn't stop. You know, there's always room to grow, and everybody's learning every day. So it's up to us to continue the education for our kids.
Wow.
And if the communication is there, then it's up to our kids to feel free to communicate with us regardless of what anybody says.
Exactly. What about the negative energy that even to be raised up in a good home and doing all the right things, and then all you take that one any negative energy that will ruin that person for life because somebody else approached them in a negative way, now they have to defend themselves.
Yeah, I think that as parents that we don't just show our kids the righteous way versus the negative way. As parents, we have to show our kids the all-around way. the person that can come to you sideways and you feel like you're that you have to have your defenses up. We have to teach our kids that some people might not communicate the way that we are communicating with each other. There's going to be people that's going to yell and scream, that's going to curse and stuff back and forth, but we have to teach our kids how to deal with those type of people. To me, if you raise your child to the best of your ability and you do everything you possibly can, you did everything right, there's nothing that you think that you could have did something different, you did an excellent job. Okay, fine. Now, if your child still decides to go the wrong way, which is the negative way, you still don't stop educating them. You teach them why it's the negative way. Why is there a consequence for what they're doing? You know, you don't stop educating them because there's going to be people challenging people every single day. But that doesn't mean that, okay, we don't have to explain it to them. No, it's our job as parents to continue the education for our kids, which is teaching them how to deal with people, all types of people in the world, in society itself, job, work, whatever.
How would you tell that young male son of yours, or another black man to approach him or challenge him? Would you want him to walk away from that individual, or would you want him to stand fast and face that?
I think that there's a way to deal with people who are challenging you the correct way. There's a way that you can get your point across. Like, perfect, okay, example, if I'm talking, let's just say I'm talking to you, right, and I feel in my heart that you're challenging me, you know, so of course my defenses are going to be up, but if I feel that I'm right with what I'm saying, I'm going to try to explain it to you so this way that you'll understand the point that I'm making. You don't have to agree, but it's a matter of agree to disagree. So I teach my kids, when you're out there in the real world and you feel 100% about what you're doing and what you're saying and you feel that someone is wrong, you can say it at any point in time, you know what, we're going to agree to disagree because this is how I feel about it, you know, this is how you feel about it, and it doesn't mean either one of us is wrong. It's just we're two different people and we feel two different ways about it.
Okay.
So I would explain it that way. I wouldn't say, oh, someone's challenging you to walk away. I would say if you get that upset and you can't make eye contact with that person, then yes, you need to walk away. But if you are able to still conduct yourself the correct way, sure.
Okay, wait, I'm kind of lost. You said if you can't make eye to eye contact, meaning?
Did you hear the question that he asked me?
Excuse me, no, I didn't. God, well, chew my head up and spit it out. No, I didn't.
Okay, because he asked me a question. Of if, you know, you're a child and the child is out there and, you know, in society and the child feels that the person is challenging them, would you tell that child to walk away?
So my answer is
if you feel they're challenging you and you feel agitated and you feel so upset about it and you can't continue the conversation, then yes, you can walk away. But I keep my kids, when it comes down to dealing with people in life, if you feel someone's challenging you and you feel like you're 100% right about what you're saying, you can deliver your message and voice your opinion. If you see it's not going anywhere, then you can just say at any point in time in that conversation, you know what, we're going to agree to disagree because I feel this way about it, you feel that way about it. Kind of at the end of the day, you know, there's no right or wrong decision about it, you know, but we're both different people, so we both feel different ways about it. And the eye-to-eye contact to me is very important, just to me. It might not be to everyone, but I think that when you're able to... Go ahead, Mr. Bell.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize for cutting you off, but with most men, with that eye-to-eye contact is a challenge. I could be mistaken. Is there any other brothers on the line say that way?
I agree.
So, no, I disagree. All eye-to-eye contact is not a challenge. I don't think it's
right,
a challenge.
But doing a disagreement,
right.
It feels like a challenge.
So if you feel... If you walking down the street and you get somebody out of eye contact and they person giving you out of eye contact, which y'all face fighting? Y'all face fighting?
I'm about to write that down. I like that, face fighting. excited. That there is also a challenge, you know, to stare down. One of the things that was said at one time, you know, who you staring at? Who you staring at me? Who you eyeballing? It's the same thing. Once you get into that confrontation, you just like, what are you looking at me? What you looking at me for? What? and this is some of the things that happen. So that challenge is still part of it. You're challenging me. Are you trying to challenge my manhood by staring me down? Do you think you're trying to poke me out? It's not happening. And this is why I brought up this topic, because it happens a lot.
But, you know, I feel that's a sign of paranoia at some point.
Can I ask you a question, though? Do you, with you feeling it's a sign of paranoia, but do you feel that when, you know, when you're raising your kids when they're younger, do you feel like raising them, making sure they understand what that eye contact is, do you feel like that's important to do at that point?
I tell them, you know, let a person look at you. You look back at them. As long as they don't approach you and touch you or nothing, hey, y'all want a face fight? You face fight. I don't care what you do. But as long as they don't come and touch you and anything like that, then hey, it is what it is. I'm not gonna lie. When I go out, I stare. I'll be like, boom. I look. So hey, person look, you know. But it depends on how paranoid that person. He could be in a bad mood or whatever. You know, you could just look at a person been in a bad mood. They'll be like, well, what you looking at? Such and such. You know, just because they mad at something else. You understand? But it takes a bigger man to be like, yeah, whatever, and just keep it moving. You understand?
Right.
You're not gonna sit there and really rumble and tumble and being a grown man just because somebody is looking at you. That means you're adolescent. You are grown. You are a child in a man's body.
Oh wow! I just did something on that. Wow. Yeah. You're right. It's that child sitting in the corner inside that adult body. Yeah.
Exactly. So. You know, if you're going to take it to that level to where you're going to be like, oh, well, you know, and then what you going to tell somebody, right? And if you got kids, oh, Daddy, what happened? This guy was staring at me. I had to punch him in the face. They're going to be like, what are you doing? You know, the kids were like, well, somebody was staring at Daddy and he hit him. That's going to give them that impression to where, okay, if somebody's staring at me, I'm going to ask them what are they looking at. See, right there is a bad upbringing. You understand?
An example, right? Where I work with the girls, and the eye contact is a big thing for them, where out of, let's just say, the 12 that we have, 3 of them understand the reason behind the eye contact. Everybody else, they don't get it. You know, they're not getting the message of it's very important to make eye contact, not just now when people are talking to you here, but just in life in general. And then we have the boys that are like 13 to 19 years old. I can tell you, if they're making eye contact with you, the eye contact they're making with you is more like staring at you, ready to eat you up. It's not,
wow,
I respect you as a woman, I respect you as an adult. You know, it's not like that. So that's why I say, do people feel that it's the same, you know, for men and women when it comes down to the eye contact? Because to me, eye contact is very important. You know, but it isn't for a lot of people. And I understand, you know, when you said that for some men, it's a hard thing. I agree. But to me, why is it that you can go out and you can see a guy looking at another guy and the next thing you know, what you looking at me for? You know, do you think that's because their response like that is because they don't understand the full thing of the full language behind the eye contact? Or do you think it's just kind of like ignorant a little bit?
Well, I do agree with you a little bit on that ignorant part, because they don't know. Brother had mentioned earlier about lack of knowledge. You know, I agree with that. You know, one of the things that the approach of approaching another brother is, you know, what's up, nigga? You know, and that's like cool. I don't understand that either. But, you know, one of the things that I was saying earlier is that if we can learn to approach our brother or our sister by saying namaste. Namaste meaning, you know, the God in me recognizes the God in you. You know, I don't know if that brings down some tension on the other brother who's having a bad day or he's having some, you know, maybe that'll cool things off instead of saying, you know, what's up, nigga, or my nigga. You know, we can change the N-word to something else that's more pleasing.
But you know, face, you know, staring at somebody is also a mental thing also. Because you could be mad and you could go outside and you could just be staring at somebody and you could have a facial expression on your face and they'll be like, you know, why are they staring at them? But meanwhile, you don't know what that facial expression is looking like on your face right there. So it could boil down to like a mental thing also.
Wow.
So it's a lot of ways to determine, you know, the point of view of the topic. Because you do have some brothers out here that's ignorant and arrogant where, you know, on their mind they just want to fight. Or they just got out of jail, so they don't mind going back, you understand, and taking somebody with them.
Exactly. Or taking somebody out, their life out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it actually depends on, you know, how you look at it. Back in the days, you could stare at somebody, and if you stare at somebody, you know, y'all probably fight or whatever. But nowadays, you can't even stare at nobody like that. You know? Because you leave a gun coming out. And if you beat them up, they're coming back, and they're not coming back by themselves. They're coming back with their boys, or they're coming back with their best friend, Smith & Wesson. So it depends on how you look at the situation. And that's the bad thing about it.
Yeah, you can be shopping with your family and get popped in the back of the head at a deli because you stared at somebody several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that the eye contact is something that parents should teach their kids when they're younger? So this way,
when they become
a teenager or they do become, you know, an adult, they understand that not just in a confrontation, but just when someone is talking to you in general, you know, how important is the eye contact to you? You know, I think that I think you had mentioned that it's hard for some, you know, black men or just men in general. But why is that? Is that something that you think that they weren't taught when they were younger? That, okay, when I'm talking to you, I need you to look at me, you know, and make the eye contact with me. You don't have to answer me back, but I want you to at least look at me so this way we're on the same page.
I agree with you on that. That family thing, when a father or a mother is talking to their child, even if they're upset, I want you to look at me and I want you to respond back to me. I want you to look at my facial expression because you're going to see other facial expressions like this. I'm not mad at you, I'm upset, but I need you to look at me when we're talking to each other. I like that.
Yeah, but, you know, some people can't do it because you know how you say when you're talking to somebody and you get them out of eye contact and your eyes go to the left, that means they're lying.
Well, they might have ADHD. You know, they might have something.
Yeah, so just something in that eye that just keep pushing it to the left, right?
Well, you know, not necessarily pushing it to the left, but just like saying, like, all right, they might have something where they can't make that eye contact. You know, me, I'm a big eye contact person. If you're looking around, okay, fine, look around, but as long as those eyes roll back to me, at least I know you're paying attention.
I want that whole eye-to-eye contact. Don't move your eyes, turn away, coming back and forth, because that means you're really not paying attention.
Right, that's what
Eye contact means a whole lot. It means a whole lot. And if a person can't get... And if a person can't give you that eye-to-eye contact where you like, all right, I want this eye-to-eye contact where you can actually look at me and know what my next word is going to be that's coming out of my mouth. That's how deep I want the eye-to-eye contact.
Right, but is that something that you teach your kids in growing up, or is that something that you just expect as an adult?
No, that's something you're supposed to teach your kids as growing up. Because when you teach them at that growing up, that's something growing up, that's something they'll know as they're getting older as an adult, to give eye-to-eye contact.
Okay.
So while they're young, you teach them giving them eye-to-eye contact, because if they turn their head, like when you're speaking to your kids and you're talking to them, the children, you'd be like, oh, such, they turn their head. What's the first thing you're going to say? Look at me when I'm talking to you.
Right.
Okay, so the eye-to-eye contact is important. So that right there, we teach them to give you that eye-to-eye contact. So that's something that should be taught as they, you know, as them being young, not wait until they get older.
Right. Okay. That was my, you know, my question as far as the eye contact is concerned. Do you teach it, or in the one, people that can't give it to you, do you think that's because they weren't taught it?
That could be so true. that could be so too. You know, they wasn't taught like that. Because think about it. You know, you have some people, when their kids act all rowdy or whatever the case may be, they don't tell them, look at me. The kids will turn their head and they'll still be talking to them.
Wow.
You understand? They'll still be talking to them and yelling and screaming at them or whatever the case is. And the kid be going to turn his head, turn their back or whatever the case is, and the parents still be talking. And in that case, that's a parent trying to be their friend and not their parent.
Okay.
You understand? I mean, there's a lot of ways you could take it. There's a lot of ways you could put it in formats. You understand? But the main thing is having them understand what it really means as they're getting older.
Okay.
You know, that's how I feel that main purpose is.
Okay.
You know, I feel like that's exactly how it is.
Well, I like that.
Yeah, because, you know, because, you know, that's the way it is. As me growing up, my mother always said, look at me when I'm talking to you. You understand? That's how I get that eye-to-eye contact like that, because that's how I was taught. Look at me when I'm talking to you. So when I'm talking to somebody, if I happen to be talking to a person, I turn my head, that means I'm really not interested. If my eyes move, I don't believe nothing you're saying. You know?
I like
that. Oh, that's just a part of life. That's just how I see it.
I know when I was raised in raised by my parents, there was a lot of that also. You know, there was more of look at me. It was more direct, look at me. You know, not listen to me, look at me.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way you want it. You know, as you've been a deacon, when you preaching or whatever, and you're looking at a person, you expect them to give you that eye to eye contact back. You understand? Because if you preach it to them, go ahead.
I also know that there's a lot of people that are a bit shy, self-esteem is low, and if the self-esteem is low, you're not going to get no eye contact at all. You know, that's some of the things that I do get. But you know what? As long as I'm talking softly, I think your approach, your voice has a lot to do with it also, with the challenge. If you're not coming off aggressively, if you're coming off with a soft tone, but also letting them understand where you're coming from. That's also less challenging. You know, I guess that's the reason why, and again, I'll mention for the third time, certain words that we use that soften up a person's tone and their approach on what they say and what they do also.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, that's the way it is. That's just how life is. That's just the way I see it. I mean, it's a bad flaws on some part, but then again, it's not. It depends on how the person take it that you're looking at them.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You got the grill faces out here when people just look mad at the world. You know? They don't even know why they're mad. They're just mad.
Do you think the community has something to do with it? Their environment, I should say? Where they were raised or the area where they live at?
I mean that could play its part too, you know, where it was raised and everything. Because if you in a neighborhood, for instance, if you're in a neighborhood and you see what all the other kids is wearing and they're wearing materialistic things and you coming out with something different, you know, that's from, you know, no offense on Kmart, and they got theirs from, you know, the Prada store or something, you understand? You know, they're gonna look at you different, you understand? And that also draws the upbringing, you know, bringing, you know, a growing up thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand? Because you're not, you don't have what the other kids have. At least you want to put yourself in that market to where, okay, I'm on this level. You understand? You don't want the kids to be on level 7 and, you know, a dress code market and you on level 3 because they're going to tease you about it. You understand? They're going to tease you about it.
Well, I know how that feels.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how it feels, man, especially in high school. Oh, my God. It is fun, but I thank God I was strong enough to get through it.
Hey, oh, you got to have that willpower. If you don't have that willpower, ain't no talking or anything that's going to make you feel like, okay, yeah, all right, I understand. It's not. It ain't gonna. You ain't gonna understand it. All you're gonna understand is why this guy's sneakers cost this kid that's my age sneakers cost $100 and something and mine's cost $9.99. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, certain things that your parents can do and certain things that they can't. But as you being a child growing up, that's not really what you want to hear. You want what the other kids got. And that draws to the thing of society.
Exactly.
Wow. That's the bad part about it.
And you can do as much as you can as a parent and do the right thing.
Yeah, you know, but some kids... And the parent could do his best they can, but some kids, it ain't that they're being selfish. It's just that, you know, as you being a kid, it's like, you know, you don't want your feelings hurt. You want everybody to be, you know, looking at you as, you know, all right, I'm not a follower. I'm trying to be a leader here, but I can't be a leader with this type of material.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Man, let me tell you, I wish I could, you know what? I wish I had more time, but man, let me tell you, you said to be a leader. And you didn't have, your family didn't have the finance, but you still had to do what, you know, you think is right. With all the name calling, and you just didn't want to go to school the next day. So I truly, truly understand. But it made you a stronger person.
Exactly.
People, black kids before me and after me will be going through it. I can sit down and say, you know what, brother, you'll be a better person. Sorry, they don't know what's going on. They're teasing you, they ignorant, they don't know, but it's all right. Continue to move on with your life.
Exactly. That's all you can do. You know? It'll be tough, but that's part of growing up. That's part of growing up.
Yeah. So you got all these kids and they're suicidal, and you know, that's another issue, but it's close to it. It's challenging.
Exactly. Adele, I want to thank you for joining us. What's your thought on, what's your final topic?
Well, I want to thank everybody for participating, first of all. Rich, I want to thank God for you, brothers like you, and anybody that's working for the station and giving us a voice and allowing us to voice our opinions and ideas. Thank you for that. Thank you again, Rich. I can't thank you enough. And like I said, to everybody that was listening, thank you. I just hope that the people that were listening, I hope they got something out of it, you know.
Because they listening, they just ain't pressing one.
And the person I care about, you know, I really thank her for encouraging me also. And I thank her for that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any shout-outs you want to give?
Yes, I'd like to give a shout out to my deacon brothers, my pastor, my family, a wonderful woman that I know. Her name is Rachel. Thank her very much.
Okay.
And for everybody else that are listening and they know my voice, I don't know if they're listening up, and all my friends and family members, thank you. And again, Rich, thank you for doing a great job, man. Thank you for this radio station.
And you're welcome back anytime, Bill, anytime. Bill Phillips, Dons and Divas. All right, y'all. Coming up next, we have the R&B artist, LVM. They singles is ridiculous. When y'all hear these tracks, y'all gonna want to go out and buy them right now. Ain't no question in my mind. Because what they doing it big. And we're going to find out what's their next step in the music industry. And we're going to play that smashing single, Hooked on You. So stay right there and don't move. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
I could dress like this, body bangs to when I sing. She the only reason for the song I sing. And I wish I could be here when she get ready to go. Dancing in the mirror and talking on the phone. Telling all the homegirls what she putting on. They already know she putting on. Cause when she hit the club, it's head turns around. She living in
All right, Dons and Divas, welcome back to GQ Palace. And with me right now, I have R&B singers LVM, Thomas Lorenzo.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Lorenzo, what's going on? I didn't know whether to say your first name first or your last name first.
it's actually Marlon and Marvin.
Okay, so I got both of y'all on right now, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, all right. I really want to thank y'all, you know, for joining us this evening. Y'all music is something incredible.
Oh, well, thank you.
I am so serious. When I first heard it, I said, oh, wow. That's all I said was like.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Y'all definitely, ain't no question, y'all definitely doing y'all thing. And
thank you.
I'm not going to lie. Casey and JoJo got nothing on y'all right now.
We're in Chicago. We're just sitting here at the house.
So that's good, you know. At least y'all get a little chance to relax, you know.
Yes.
Now let me ask y'all. Now y'all brothers, y'all twins, and y'all call yourself LVM. What does initials stand for? What does LVM mean?
Well, LVM is actually the L and the V is the fourth letters of our first name, and the M is what connects us.
Mm.
So that's where we got the LVM from.
Now, when y'all first started music, did like one of y'all start first and the other one was going solo and then the other brother joined in? Or did y'all both just decide, okay, let's start doing music and, you know, making these songs and doing these tracks?
Oh, we decided to do it together, actually. We went into the project, 3 years earlier just to get everything right, like harmonize and, you know, just do it together.
Mm. And it was just something that y'all can't. How old were y'all actually when y'all had started, you know, started doing
this? We actually started around, 28, 29?
Yes. Yeah, 28, 29. Mm. Wow. And y'all just decided. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, before we started being an artist, we started writing for a lot of local Chicago artists that's up and coming also. So that's how we got our start. But, you know, then we started to try to do our own things now.
Now, what actually made y'all decide to call yourself LBM? I mean, like, it could have been other names, but whose idea was it to say, all right, we're going to use the first two letters and we're going to call ourselves this?
Well, we came up with it because we really couldn't come up with any names. There were so many names thrown out, so we just said, you know what, let's just take the fourth letters from our names and start with that and then use the M, which is the common denominator, you know. And most of what we write about is about love, so the LV is kind of pity for love.
Wow. Well, that was brilliant, though, to think of, because, you know, that got a little swing to it. LVM is going to make you think, like, you know, what does these initials stand for? What's the meaning behind this name? Now, y'all got Brian Humphrey, owner and engineer of Dog City Studios, you know, helping y'all out with y'all entitled album, Bedroom Eyes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Bedroom Lies was actually written a long time ago, and we found Brian, when we were around about 25 years old, and he stood with us ever since, and he kind of flung everything out for us. You know, he took time with us. And Bedroom Lies really came up with basically just finding a nice beat to it, and we came up with Aaron B. He really helped us out. So. And the CD is basically about, of course, it's about heartbreak, love, finding love, losing love, and never giving up on love, actually. So that's basically where bedroom lies come from. Everybody can relate to relationship problems and happiness in a relationship.
Now, you know, every group has, you know, its disagreements. Did it ever come to a point where y'all, like, disagreed on something and was like, you know what, we want to go?
We always disagree. We almost think alike, almost. Yeah. So, yeah, there's been many arguments about, you know, what direction should we go. Yeah, that's just common with us. But we come together in the end.
But you, that's the good thing right there. You know, in the beginning, you know, you disagree, but as long as y'all get it together in the end, it ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, right.
Now, exactly. Now, it said LVM has a tasteful, refreshing passion and grace when y'all delivering songs. Elaborate us on that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it is. A lot of the R&B music out there, I think a lot of artists have lost base with true R&B, and what we feel that R&B is basically telling emotions, telling a story, something that comes from the heart, you know, not just putting words to a beat and throwing. It got to be something that people can relate to, remember, and it can be lasting. We don't want to be one of them artists that, you know, it's a great song, but the song don't last 20 years down the line.
Okay.
So that's what we're trying to do, is bring back original R&B.
I see. So mainly because the songs y'all got, they definitely going to last, you know, because it's that catchy feel, you know. Then y'all got that relaxed, laid back, light a candle feel, you know. Now, I have both singles, Bedroom Lies and Miss You, featured on 107.5 WGCI. On Reverb Nation, Bedroom Lies is number 6. And on Westside Will Radio, Miss You enter number 7 on the top 10 countdown. How did y'all feel about that?
Well, actually, we were surprised. I mean, because when we were asked to start doing our own thing, we really just wanted to get the sound out there. And then when we learned that, you know, a lot of people were calling in to request the song Miss You and Bedroom Lies, and it entered in at them spots, we was stunned. We was,
yeah, which Miss You is my mama's favorite.
it was shocking that people actually was calling in and requesting the songs, and that meant a lot to us, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I want to do right now, I want to get into a Bedroom Lies. Tell us a little bit about that single before we get into it.
Okay, Bedroom Lies was actually written by me over a breakup, and I wrote that song probably when I was probably 19 years old. Never recorded the song until we was actually able to find a beat or good music to go to the song. So it's basically about a relationship that went bad, and the lying that went on in the relationship. So that's where Bedroom Lies came
from. All right, so we're going to get into that. All right, Dons and Divas, the number to call, 646-200-3838. Press 1 to go on the air to speak to LBM or stay on the line to hear the show. This is one of their smashing singles, Bedroom Lies. Check it out. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
That single right there is crazy.
Thank you.
That single, and that's definitely a club banger.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to us. It really do.
And we're going to get that single pumping out here in New York. We're going to get it pumping out here. We're going to get it pumping out here. Because it got to be heard. It got to be heard.
Thank you.
No, our head definitely got to be heard because y'all definitely doing it.
Thank you so much. That means that really do means a lot to us. We work really hard and it's a struggle, but we'll continue to do it.
Oh, we gonna help y'all to the fullest of our ability. You want to say that's what GQ Palace is all about, and that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
That's only the beginning. Now, what makes LVM music different from everybody else?
Well, you hear a lot of people going dance music, actually. It's not many R&B out there that's really doing much of good R&B music. R&B doesn't have to have a lot of things going on in it. It can be straightforward, and I think that's what we're missing right now.
Now, who writes most of the songs, or do y'all collaborate with each other when it's time to write a song?
It depends. Well, when we get a track, sometimes Marvin, like We're Missing You, he wrote that song all by himself. I just came in and did the background. But it really depends. Sometimes we sit down and we write together. Sometimes it depends on who's feeling what and going through what at the moment. And I trust my brother when it comes when he's putting things to a paper, words to a paper, when I know he's putting it to the paper, I know it's coming from his heart. So I really do. It really depends on when we get the track. So we mostly try to do things together, but if he's feeling it or if I'm feeling it, we'll do it solo.
And you know, that's what's good about that, because both of y'all are writers, so both of y'all got the chance to either write songs individually and then y'all could still write songs together.
Right. Exactly. And you know, if a word don't fit, you know, he'll come along and put something else that rhymes to it, or, you know, it works really good. We kind of think alike, you know. We bounce off each other. We really do.
See, that's the good thing about it. Because you got some, you know, some artists out here, you know, they can't handle the fact of this person writing it because they don't want to say it the way they wrote it, and they mad because they didn't sing their song, and, you know. And it's good that y'all, you know, brothers, and y'all got that collaboration going on. Because, you know, a lot of brothers don't get together, real, you know, as close as y'all are.
Yeah, that's true. But and it's also, we like working with other artists. We like getting other people's input because, again, we all in this together. And if we can make each other sound better, it goes a long way. We all here for the same goal, and that's good music. And so,
see, that's what's good about it. Now, y'all currently working on your first full-length release CD with producer Aaron B. Is Aaron the only producer y'all going to be dealing with, or do y'all use random producer, or y'all plan on using random producers?
Well, actually, we're looking for some new producers, a fresh sound, still R&B, but fresh sound. We love what Aaron B have done for us. We would love to work with him again. We're trying to work things out and see where we're going to go from here right now. So, yeah, we're definitely going to try to stay back with Aaron B because he knows our voice and we love his music, his tracks.
Now, so who actually produced that track, Bedroom Lies?
That was Aaron B, yes.
Wow. So he's definitely doing it.
He's great. Very good, very good. I remember hearing that track and I was like, you know what, Marlon, this is. I remember him writing Bedroom Lies without a beat, and when I heard the beat, I was like, this would fit perfect
for Bedroom Lies. It
hasn't changed a bit. And again, I wrote Bedroom Lies probably 10, 15 years before I even heard the track. So, and I held on to the song until we were able to find a track that actually fit that the sound we were looking for.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from.
And you know what? That's good that y'all could actually hold on to the song for that long. You understand? Because you got a lot of artists that when they have songs for that long, they don't want to do nothing with it because they feel they can't bring it out to what the music is now. But that song right there, if it could be written, like you said, like 9 or 10 years ago, sound like something that was written today.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
if it sounds true, it'll stay around.
Oh, it's going to stay around. It's going to stay around. Now, while y'all getting your own CD together, y'all still continue to ghostwrite for up-and-coming artists. How do y'all balance that out? You know, knowing that y'all still, you know, got a few steps climbing yourself, how do y'all balance that out to deal with writing for the other artists and y'all still got, you know, y'all don't feel like, well, I could take this song, or you know what I mean?
Well, the way we do that is, well, we all in it together, first of all. If we can't do a specific date or time, you know, we just let them know or you know, we try to come together no matter what, you know. We try to make ourselves, you know,
available.
Yes, available for everyone. And it's hard, you know. We're trying to do our own thing, and we know they're trying to do their thing, and it really goes to I hate to say it, but what comes first, and mm-hmm. it's really my brother and I. So I'm sure they understand. I mean, so I really don't know. They just gotta wait, right?
Now, I want to get into another one. I love this single right here. When I heard this single, this is the single I heard, and I played this single, I tell you, no lie, you can ask my wife, I played this single down there all night when I first heard it. Hook on you.
Wow.
Let us know the concept behind that single. Who wrote that single, Hooked on You?
Hooked on You. Oh, that was me, Marvin. Hooked on You was actually the last song we recorded. We recorded like at least about 7. We kind of threw away a couple of songs. But that was the last song we recorded. And Aaron Beats, once again, he just gifted, and I just felt the melody, I felt the beat, and at the time I was going through a lot of emotions with that, and it was actually a gospel song, and I actually turned it into an R&B song.
Wow. Well, this single, we're going to get into that single right now, because this single is just, it's crazy. All right?
Okay.
All right, Dons and Divas. Here's another banger by LVM, Hooked on You. This is fire. That's all I got to say. It's straight up fire. Remember where you heard it first. GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Silly of me to let you go.
been you. Now I'm sitting here alone. Girl, I tried, still can't hide, can't get away from you.
Played it all night long. Are y'all there? Hello, fellas, y'all there? Hello. Hello, fellas, are y'all there? Can anybody hear me? I don't know what's going on right now. I don't know, but that last track was Hooked on You by LVM. All right, so what we're going to do, because we're going to contact LVM, we're going to get back in touch with them.
We're still on the phone.
Oh, there y'all go. I was wondering where y'all went.
Wondering where you went.
I was jamming. I was like, hey.
I was too.
Until I played that track all night long. We actually have a call on the line for y'all. We're going to bring that call in real fast. I got to continue to talk to y'all.
Great.
All right?
Great.
Hello, caller. You there?
Yes, I'm here. Rich Money, GQ Palace. How you doing, brothers?
What's
going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. I'm doing all right. Listen, yo, I want to thank y'all brothers, man, for making time, making the kind of music y'all making. You know, we really need to hear that, or I really need to hear that, because
thank
what you brothers bringing back is in my opinion, original R&B. Love song.
Thank you.
It's the type of songs they hear that I'm hearing that is going to be classics. You know what I mean? Timeless.
Wow.
And I can... turn the lights off with a little Hennessy. I can do it now. I'm serious, for real. Oh man.
Did you hear that track? Did you hear that track?
Man, listen, that track of my CD player is gonna melt.
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
Gotta put it on hot ice when you mail it to me.
And it's more where that came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's more where that came from.
Keep them coming. We love it.
I don't even know if you heard Bedroom Lies. Did you hear Bedroom Lies?
To tell the truth.
Thank you.
Now, fellas, let me ask y'all. Now, y'all actually signed with Makio?
Uh-huh.
Is it Makio Records?
It's called, Makio Records.
Go ahead.
That came about, we're no longer signed with them. That was for a charity CD. It was called 8 Africa. And she heard, I think she heard Hooked on You. And she wanted Hooked on You on that charity CD. And she signed us for that CD. And that's how Miko Records came about. But we're no longer signed with Miko. It was just for that particular song and that time.
But you can call and see if she's available.
Well, we have another call on the line for y'all. We're going to bring them in right now.
Okay.
Hello? Caller, are you there?
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. How are you,
Law? Oh, great.
Well, I like the way that's like, hey. So y'all twins, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first off, the music is really on time. I'm serious. I mean, because nowadays the music versus, well, it's not really music to me. It's low-rating women, teaching the younger people how to kill each other, whatever, you know. But y'all music, I could listen to it 24/7.
Thank you. That means a lot to us.
And I mean, honestly, y'all guys keep up the good work. You know, it's all that.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to us. It really do. It's so much going on in the world.
It is.
And we just want to make
daily
a good message out there. A good message to the world.
And you're giving a good message to the old, young, you know, in between. But, you know, I like that 80s, 70s and 80s music, so I'm good with it.
Uh-huh. And
you guys.
And I think what it is just bringing back what love is what it should be, what R&B was originally for, love. And that's the whole message that we're trying to bring out. Love, relationship, pain, joy, sorrow, whatever. And that's
what I love about it. And especially, what was that, the Bedroom Lies?
Yes.
I can relate to that one. I definitely can relate to that one. And I'm going to have to get that one because I need to play that more often. Just to let myself know that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, a lot of people been doing some bedroom boogie and some bedroom lies.
And it's all lies. All lies. But, yeah, you guys, you know, most definitely keep God first. And, you know, I see y'all going far, very far.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'll definitely buy the music, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So. You guys take care.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye. We have another call on the line for y'all. We're going to bring them in right now.
Okay.
Hello, caller, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, how are you on the line?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
We're good.
That's good. That's good. I am sitting here jamming. I could say my favorite outfit too is Hooked on You. That's my favorite.
Oh wow! You know
that's everybody's favorite. Of course it is, right?
And it's funny that it was originally written as a gospel song, but my brother, I don't know, he was going through some things right when he wrote that.
Oh yeah.
All I did was came in and do some bag up for him.
That is definitely, I mean, when I say good music, that is some good music right there.
Thank you.
And, you know, and Bedroom Lies, you know, that's good as well. You know, I'm kind of with the Bedroom Boogie for that song, though. But, you know, that's definitely excellent. You guys are definitely doing a great job, and keep doing what you're doing. You're definitely going to go far, and, just, you know, don't give up. Stay focused and keep grinding.
Thank you. That means a lot to us. They really do.
You're welcome. Take care.
Now, fellas, let me ask y'all.
Okay.
What advice can you give me as an up-and-coming artist to help me succeed in the music industry?
Stay true to yourself. And don't give up. Don't give up. You know, of course, everything is money. You know, studio time, everything. And that can discourage a lot of artists. Just find someone that believes in your craft. Like with me and my brother, our family believed in our craft. We kept it undercover for a while, and when they heard it, they told us to keep going. And, you know, just find someone that really supports.
I have a good foundation, and always stand true to yourself. Write what's in your heart, not what's popular. If you write what's popular, it's not going to last long. You're really not.
Okay. I got these. Like they're writing about this materialistics and all that stuff, and I could definitely vouch for that. Now, every artist has that one best song on their CD. Which one would y'all say is y'all best song?
Me
that
personally,
y'all like and why?
I miss you. And I like that one because it was written by my brother, Marvin. And when we went in to record it, I remember Brian Humphrey cutting off all the lights in the studio. And when Marvin went into the booth, you heard this emotion come from his body. And it was you had to really be there to feel it. It just sent chills up your body, because when he was singing that song, he really, really was letting it out, just letting everything that he had pent up inside of him out, and that's my favorite song on the CD. It really is.
I like them all, but my most popular is Hooked on You that I listen to that night.
Okay. Well, you know what? I want to get into one more of y'all's singles.
Okay.
Miss You. But that's right. Also hitting the nation hard. Now, like you said, the scenario behind it, he was feeling it and everything, you know, but what it actually means to y'all. Now, who wrote that song? Marlon?
Marvin. Yeah, me.
Marvin wrote it? Okay.
Yeah.
What did that actually mean to you when you was writing that song, that single?
It meant love. It was coming from love. It was coming from a place where, you know, when you have that special one in your life and you tend to take things for granted and you wish you can turn back hands of time sometimes, but, it really came from love. It really came from, you know, speaking your what's in your heart, you know, and trying to move on. That's what it came from.
All right, so we're going to get into that right now. All right, Dons and Divas, here's some more fire by LVM. Miss You. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Imagine what the CD sounds like.
Thank you.
You know, because it's just ridiculous, you know. It's really ridiculous. Our tracks are so serious. It doesn't even make sense. It's just, wow. That's all I can say. Now, do y'all have any videos out at the moment? And if not, what's the first single y'all going to shoot for a video?
No, right now we're going to try to focus on the music right now.
Oh, okay, okay. So I'm going to wait later on down the line for, like, the singles and everything. I mean, the album. So I don't have a single and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who would y'all say is... Go ahead.
Yeah.
Somebody was going to say something. I don't know who was wrong.
Oh, I was saying we just wanted to focus on the music right now. We would love to do a video to Miss You, but again, we're gonna try to focus on finishing up the CD and try to get it out there, and you know, and hope that everybody enjoy what the hard work that we put into it. So that's what we're trying to do right now.
Now, do y'all have any? I mean, who would y'all say are some of y'all biggest influences in the music industry?
Oh, right now I'm liking what I'm a Jackson fan, so I really want to go see. I heard the Jacksons did the Apollo, so I wanted to go see that. Usher, Trey Songz, Janet Jackson, Mary J. Blige,
yeah,
Aretha Franklin, Teddy Pendergrass. You name it. We pretty much
study. Now, what are y'all like? Are y'all looking for something independent, something major, or it don't really matter?
We're looking for both. It really don't matter.
Whatever God bless us with.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever God bless us with, and if the blessing is coming from God, if he say go major record label, go major. If he say go independent, go independent. But we're pretty much going independent right now.
We're actually looking to work out another studio, actually. So we want to see how just focus on the music first and see where it takes us.
Okay, now let me ask y'all in two words. Describe LVM.
Two words. I can honestly say I could maybe one word. We're real, and what I mean by that is, you know, it's just real R&B music that
we just want to touch a lot of. People,
you know,
I can't sum it up in two words. I would just say great music.
Okay, yeah. Okay, great music. Okay, that's definitely a winner right there. That's definitely what y'all got. Great music, ain't no question about it.
Thank you.
Can't afford
to work too hard for it. You know, we want to just make sure we put something out there that, you know, sticks in people's heads. You know, that people can enjoy, you know, at barbecues or at the club or whatever.
Or sit back at home and have a drink and be like, wow, that relationship really took me for a loop. or I'm really in love, you know.
Okay.
That's all LVM is trying to do.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. Now, do y'all have any performances coming up at any time soon?
Actually, we're trying to work on that. We're trying to just, you know, get our stage performance together. We're trying to see what works for us, really. We don't have any venues actually to play out on, but we're looking.
We're open, but we're also still in the studio trying to finish recording and that way we can give people a good show, you know.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Now, fellas, it's been an honor having y'all on. Would y'all like to give the listeners your information, your Facebook, your Twitter, your web? Give them all that.
Well, you can reach us on Facebook, Marlon Thomas, or you can reach us through email, Lorenzo M. Marlon at yahoo.com. You can reach us on Reverb Nation, Our Stage, you know, more is good, you know, to help us, you know.
Yeah, and just type in, you do a search, Google searches, and put in LVM Twins, and you'll reach us. You'll find a way. You know.
I think somebody was going to say something before I had asked to get the information. Was one of y'all going to say something before I had asked to get the information?
Oh, no, I guess that was it. You know, if any other artists, you know, just looking for, you know, things and, know, come talk to us. You know where we at.
No, is there any shout outs I want to give?
Oh, shout out to our family, actually.
And we want to thank you all. You all have been amazing. Yes, and this has been I enjoyed every bit of it from the time that you all left us a message to do this radio show. So we thank you all and for helping.
Very honored.
Well, you know, we want to thank y'all for taking the time out, you know, to join us. And we definitely going to push you, you know, do what we can, you know, push you out there, but these tracks is going to be heard.
Thank you.
We got a complimentary CD coming out, you know, promotional CD coming out. We definitely going to put the track on there and everything.
Okay, that sounds wonderful.
Holler at us if you want us to do some shows. You know, we'll come to New York.
All right.
Step down the stage.
All right. And you know, y'all welcome anytime. We're ready to come back on. Y'all want to send a track in? You know, Rich, play this track for us. It's never a problem.
Oh, we love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, fellas. LVM, Dons and Divas. All right, coming up next, Mina Long, Vice President for BX Records. She's also the founder of Mink Organization. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
Came in the door, chucked in my coat, and who I'm
Asian Divas. Welcome back to GQ Palace. And with me right now, I have Mina Long, Vice President for BX Records. Mina, welcome to the show.
Y'all could have left me on hold because me and Whitney was just jamming. me and Whitney was jamming just now. Hi, Rich.
What's going on, Mina? How
not
are you?
Not a thing, not a thing. I'm blessed and highly favored.
Yes, you are. You're doing some big thing.
Just a little, just some little stuff here and there.
Yeah, just a little, right?
Yeah, you know you got to be modest about it, right?
Exactly.
But I thank y'all so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. We thank you for taking the time out to join us.
Awesome.
Now, let me ask you, how did you get started with BX Records?
Okay. There's a family relationship between the president and my husband. And I was going through the motions of creating Mink, and I started doing some heavy work with putting Mink together. And he approached me with an event coordinator role. And after several months of, I would assume, succeeding in that role, he felt it most appropriate to make me the vice president of BX Records.
Okay. Now, what do you see ahead for BX Records in, like, the next 5 years as you being the vice president?
BX Records' focus is bringing entertainment together. A lot of the time, what we see that artists do is everybody's in their own little circle trying to make this big impact on the music industry. And what BX Records says is, let's work together. Let's start with one borough, one band, which is the Bronx, and extend that. And over the course of the years, the expectation is that we reach so much further than the New York tri-state area.
So what would you consider to be the most important aspects of your job with BX Records?
Making sure that I keep the artists focused. All the time when you're in this self-endeavor of trying to make this big movement, you become complacent to the things that you're doing, meaning you don't look abroad what's in front of you or what's aside of you, other opportunities. And my goal with the artists is just to make sure that their eyes are open to every last opportunity and that they not only just jump on every opportunity that they've been given, but they actually weigh the options of that particular opportunity and make sure it's in line with their brand or their vision.
Oh, okay. So is BX Records more like a label or entertainment?
We are an entertainment company. We've done so much mentorship to artists that most of the time people see us in the light as management or a label, but we are right now focused on just the entertainment piece of it.
Okay. Now, you're not only the president, the vice president of BX Records, you're also the founder of Mink. Can you enlighten us on Mink, what the initials stand for, and is there a meaning behind it?
Okay. So Mink is spelled with a C and not a K, so it's M-I-N-C, and it is Mina Incorporated. And I believe that my vision of bridging the gaps together between the people who need services and the people who can offer services is the primary goal of Mink. How I'm going to do that is through me initially, but through my interns and external staff, who our vision is just to provide exceptional service across the board. So whether you're a catering hall looking for a regular DJ, we are the liaison between the two, the person who's in need and the person who has the service.
Okay, so you're mainly hitting all angles.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now,
not only do we make sure that those connections are being made, but when it's an event or something like that, a Mink representative is normally at every event that we partner with to make sure that the event has a system so that the host of the event can do just that, just hosting.
Okay. So now you have a lot of things going on with just Mink. What can
I do?
Encounter with Mink?
What I always want people to walk away with is exceptional customer service. I think that a lot of the time companies aren't branded in every day and every moment that we have the opportunity to service people, that we do it in a way that people feel valued and they feel like they want to come back. I always want people to walk away with the feeling of, yeah, I'm going to deal with Mink again because this is what I received.
Okay, so it's something like a fish rod. So you get that fish,
yes.
You throw it back, really, you want them
yes.
to come right back to you.
Yes.
There ain't nothing wrong
yes.
with that at all.
Yeah, the goal, the big thing is, you know, if I satisfy one person's hopes and the prayers, and that they will go tell someone else about the exceptional service they received, and then the ball will continue to roll over years.
Okay, you're absolutely right about that. And that's a real good attitude to have, too.
It's so not an easy role, but it's worth it when I especially think about myself being on the other side, receiving services from somewhere, somebody that was just halfway put together, or it just fell apart in the middle, or if it was never put together properly. And that's such a discouraging feeling, especially when you're spending money that this economy has surely said we don't have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right about that. So vouch for you on that one. Now,
yeah. Yes.
Now, Mink is a public relations company
yes.
that deals with special events, planning, promotional advertising. What goals are you trying to sell?
I want when people hear the name Mink, or when people are in a mode of not knowing where to go, where to turn with their own business or their own service, that the first thing that comes up in their mind is Miss Mink, Mina, Mink. One of the three.
Okay.
So I'd hope to accomplish that people just finally get a chance to have a business that is reputable, a business that is not only worried about the integrity of my brand, but the integrity of your brand.
Okay. Now, you said Mink is to bring the customer's idea of delight, experience.
Absolutely.
Life. Elaborate us on that.
Okay. So I'll give you one in particular. I'll use BX Records. We have an event called Raw. And in his vision, he gave certain bullet points about what he wanted this particular event to look like. It's my goal and my vision, and I make my staff feel the same way, that you need to live in this event. And if you're unsure about where the direction of the event is going, have that constant communication with the host or the owner of that event. Be able to bring forth what they want. So if they say, you know, in the strangest of worlds with some of the people that you deal with, I only want Perrier water. I mean, you're not just going to put Perrier water on the table. You're going to actually put it with a platter and some kind of dressing under the Perrier water. The presentation is what matters.
Exactly.
So you've hit the details, but you've also went a step beyond to make it memorable.
Okay. So you already have your presentation set.
Yes.
Before the next event even occurred.
Yes.
Now, how long?
What we do is we.
Go ahead.
We normally sit down with the owner of the event probably two times prior to us taking on the event. And the reason for doing that is to make sure, one, the first initial meeting is to get all of the logistics out of the way. The second one is probably after we've already went home, probably 5 days, 7 days have passed by, and we've gotten a chance to think about the event in its particulars. And now the questions start to roll about how you want this done. And then at that point, probably after the first or second meeting, we can tell the buyer if we can or cannot fulfill what they're looking for. And that's extremely important. A lot of times we're so excited that someone has taken notice to what we can do that we're automatically saying yes before we even decide if it's something I can really dedicate my time to, can I dedicate the manpower to, can I dedicate, you know, whatever else that gig is going to require.
Exactly. So some people jump the building and don't know if
yeah.
there's a mattress down there.
Yeah, the thing about when you're great, and this is for anybody who's great, the blessings will come.
Mm.
And in those blessings, you need to kind of define which ones work, which ones don't. And
exactly.
There's nothing wrong with saying that something doesn't work for what you're doing.
Exactly. I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Now, your vice president at BX Records, dealing with artists and showcase, you're
yes.
the founder of Mink, dealing with models, venues, promotional
yes.
events, entertainment, radio station, Home Fantasy Radio, and the list just goes on and on and on.
Yes.
How
yes.
do you balance that out?
I don't sleep. I've been married for 6 years, and he doesn't even know my first and last name anymore. I don't even know that I know what he looks like anymore. I have a 5-year-old son who I don't think he saw me in 5 years. The balance is, this is the thing. You work hard day and night, and then there's a time and point where you just say you have to take a vacation. You have to rest. And at a certain point, I get a chance to rest. Is it as much as I probably need? No. But anybody else who's starting up a company from the ground up, Rich, you know, it is nonstop until you actually make some kind of wave in the water.
Exactly.
And once you make the wave, it's not even over then. It's just begun because you got to keep that momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I try my hardest. I try my hardest to get some away time, even if it's not long hours. You know, I do my little yoga or my little stretching or whatever, and give myself a couple of minutes to regroup. Usually in that time, somebody's calling, somebody's emailing, something fell apart, something's wrong. We've just actually incorporated into this whole mix of Mink is Major Mink Radio, which is a radio show that I host along with my DJ. Each and every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on NightlineRadio.com, on MajorMinkRadio.com, on BXRecords.com, and on IMMikeMajor.com. So it's syndicated from 4 different sites simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And that, even though it's work, has been one of the greatest additions that I've made thus far.
Okay.
And it's because I get to be a clown. I get to prank call people, I get to listen to music, I get to laugh and joke, I get to talk to my viewers or my patrons who come out to events and support us so much. I get to talk to them for 2 full hours, and there's nothing that can beat that at this moment anyway.
You're absolutely right.
Now, I also get a chance to see my artists on a different level because I will interview them on purpose. And I won't tell them what questions I'm going to ask, if I'm going to give a freestyle, if I'm not, because I want them to be so on cue when, God forbid, someone asks for something that you won't normally do.
Yeah, but you don't think that could cause like a little nervousness? Because you got artists that, okay, they're supposed to know certain things, but then you got some interviewers who questions is nothing like what the artists think that they're going to, you know, hear.
I always tell artists this, an artist in particular, and I'm married to an artist. So I get, for the most part, from an external point of view, the whole artistry, the whole, you know, listen to my music and that's going to bring you closer to me, et cetera. Though I believe in that, I also believe that if Diddy or Jay-Z or whomever else came to you at a drop of a hat and they want to know, why should I sign you on my label, or why should I push your album, or why should I push you in general, you can't tell them. You shouldn't tell them. You should be ashamed to tell them, throw in my CD, top in my this, turn on my YouTube. You should be able to articulate who you are, why music, why this. You know, what captivates you? What brings you closer to being a musician? What are the things that turn you on, turn you off? You know, those things are in conversation. Those things are not on your track.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, because artists should automatically know what they're doing and where they're going.
Yeah, I put them in the hot seat. Now, all of my artists, like, I love them. So they'll come to me and they'll be like, yo, Mina, please. Please, not today. I'm like, yo, dude, I don't know who's going to show up on the air. I don't know. I may ask you for something I didn't know I was going to ask you for. And in the end of the day, we all learn from the experience, and it turns out to be something great.
Yeah. You know, it might be a little shattered at first, but as long as you get it situated at the end,
Yeah, they beat me in the head. You too hard on us. You too hard on us. As young as I am, I'm like the mama. And they're like,
but that's
mom,
how you gotta be sometimes.
Yeah, you too hard on us. I mean, somebody did it for me. And though, you know, going through it, I was like, oh, God, again? Oh, God, I did that wrong? Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And when you come out of it, you feel so much better. You feel so much greater.
Mm-hmm. You do.
And you're able to pass that message down on somebody else who's coming up after you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
definitely.
I always
right about that.
Yeah, I always encourage them, pass the message down to somebody else young or somebody else who's just coming into the game, the things that you've learned. There's no need for you to have information or how to do something and you're just housing it for yourself. It's used to pass down.
Yeah, that's selfishness.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? I feel like we've, at least I know for me, being raised where I was raised, you had to be selfish in a sense because everybody was trying to be on the come up. But as you get older, you let go of that selfishness, in a sense. Or you should let go of that selfishness, in a sense.
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it, you know.
Yeah.
And what people consider selfishness.
Some things you definitely need to keep under wraps, and it's only you know how to do it, how to get it done, because that's going to be your niche. But then the other things that, you know, they come frequent, you know, you could give those away. Those are like the giveaways.
Right, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, there's certain things that y'all never, I don't care how many times y'all interview me, y'all never figure out how it's done.
Uh-huh. It's always a way.
There's three of me behind this.
A person could bring out every personality.
Right, exactly.
It may not be at one time, but another, it might come out. Then they'll be like, oh, I didn't know that person would come out.
Exactly. That's the versatility. Don't even look sideways. That's the versatility I got in there. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, what are you looking to achieve with Mink?
Be rich and famous. No, I'm joking. No, I'm not. My Rich, you got me acting a fool on here. My goal with Mink, again, is to have this reputation where people feel nothing more but comfortable working with myself and my staff. There is a greater gain when you feel comfortable about a process or when you feel comfortable about a mission or going forward with something. And the best compliment is for a patron or someone who has hired me to say, Mina, I felt so supported at this particular event, or normally I have to go do X, Y, and Z and be 50 million places, and for this particular event, I didn't feel that way. I felt like I had a team. We are the makeshift team, so to speak, for whomever has hired us. So the mission is really just to give them the support that they need. Events are not easy to put together. Catering businesses aren't easy to own.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you need the support and you need the focus of people.
Mm. Wow. So now, speaking of people, now if you had to choose between Mink and BX Records, which one would it be and why?
Can I laugh first? Or is this like a serious, serious question? Like... Are we joking with
you
this question?
Realize, now, think about it. Think about it. Like you said, your husband brought you over to be at Texas.
Oh, now you're going to throw that in the wood. Now that's got to be the part.
I'm bringing out the other personality.
I'm true. Yeah. That's Mina. I'm truly grateful for my opportunities. I'm so political right now. I'm truly grateful for my opportunities with BX Records because it's opened so many doors for that network for me to even have with Mink. However, Mink is my baby. I sleep, eat, drink everything that I do, but I do it 10 times harder thinking about Mink. Even people who have like a flyer that we're sponsoring that event, I'm still literally in every piece of that event because I want to make sure the brand of Mink is not going to be compromised. Definitely, hands down, no question, M-I-N-C .. I love my baby.
I figured that, but, you know, it's good to just ask anyway, you know.
Yeah. I would definitely see how long I could go with splitting myself into two. But if it didn't last, I'm definitely going with my baby.
Okay. Now, you have a new project going on, Raw, Ready and
yes.
Willing. Tell us about
yes.
that.
The Ready and Willing is a showcase, in a sense. It's more so a challenge. And what we do is, that's a BX Records event. It's hosted at the Q Lounge, and we've been at the Q Lounge since January of 2012. It's a once-a-month event, and we have three categories of artists. We have preliminary artists who are opening artists, who are most of the time they just started out or they are trying out or they're experienced, but they're trying out a new song to see how it gravitates to the audience, et cetera. Then we have the featured artists, and featured artists get to perform two songs. They've already seasoned. They've been pushing one particular song for however long, and we are just the backbone on the support and making the performance public. And then we have the contestant slots, and those contestants win several prizes from BX Records. We do not rate at all the contestant slots. The audience, who's going to be the ones who's going to purchase the material, are the ones who can rate the performances for each performer. We have six contestants per show.
Okay. So you're doing the showcases and everything. Now,
yes.
Let's get back to BX Records real fast.
Yes.
Now, as you being a vice president, how do you see the future for BX Records?
I think the future of BX Records is solid. And the reason why I believe that it's very solid is because, like I said before, we didn't come, the company's been in existence since 1998. And he didn't start the vision, and neither did I come along to this vision, that we were going to be able to touch every geographical region overnight.
Mm-hmm.
What makes BX Records such an individual is that we're going to build the Bronx. The Bronx is where hip-hop started, and we're going to bring that whole momentum back and bring on every borough, Westchester, Mount Vernon, down south, upstate, all of that along with us as the years go by.
Okay. Now, what do you consider being your best aspect for BX Records and Mink?
Best aspect of BX Records is that we work as a team. We fight, we pull each other's hair out and put it back on right before a show. We tear each other down and paste that joint back together before show. We have our differences of opinion, but we come back together as family. Every single show ends the same. The best aspects of Mink, again, it's my baby. I'm going to handle it with care. I am going to scrutinize the people who I work with because I want to make sure that they handle their brand and my brand with care. So that intimacy is what makes Mink different from other companies.
Okay. So Mink is your baby.
Yes.
So I guess BX is a friend. What's the
BX
next?
BX is not
step?
A friend. BX is like my baby's mama baby.
Oh, okay.
Like you got love for it, strong love, but it's not yours.
Let's keep it real, Rich. Stop playing.
That's my baby's mama baby.
So what is the next step for me?
Oh, my God. I've been, as far as Mink is concerned, I've been in a closer relationship working one-on-one with artists. And I think that not in a management aspect, even though I've touched on that greatly, but to do more one-on-one morale building with artists and business owners. Though I'm 30, I've spent since the beginning of my working years, since I was 15 years old, working in human service, public service, et cetera. So being able to speak, being able to articulate is very, very important to me, especially when it's a brand that I surely believe in. Right now I'm working with the artist Catherine Hawks, who's phenomenal. Her promo, her drive, her mission, all of the reasons why she wants to be an artist are so present. And it's important for me to work with people like that because half of the work is already done. All I need to continue to do is to make sure that she stays on target, which I never have to do because the girl is always on target, that her events are like one after the other, which we've continued to succeed at. Her events, she's booked over and over and over and over. There's never a day that this girl's rest. So working one-on-one with artists, not all at one time because I want to give everybody their time, but definitely working one-on-one with artists and new business owners or new people coming into the business, period, and helping them along the way and being able to articulate their vision.
Okay. Now, I know where you want to see the ladies and stuff at 2 or 3 years from now.
You said you know
where
what?
You explained where you want the labels and the entertainment to be and Mink to be right now.
Yeah.
Where would you like to be, Nina, yourself, 5 years from now after all this?
Having somebody run Mink for me, they only call me when it's really, really something that they can't do. And I'm laying on a beach somewhere, not because I'm deserving, because I've worked blood, sweat, and tears, and I can't do nothing else but lay on the beach and catch rays. And I'm taking GQ Palace with me.
Well, have an umbrella.
Mite, where's my twine, mite? No, I really just want to be in a place where I'm not split in 50 different directions. And not only am I not split between 50 different directions, but finding people who are reliable. To find people who are reliable these days and to be able to do things on their own without having to be babysat, in a sense, is a struggle. And I want to be able to get to a place where I have a strong team behind me and that I'm only there really to open deals and possibly close them. And my staff feels so strong that they can execute a patron's vision without me even having to be there.
Wow.
Yeah, so it may take me more than 5 years, Rich.
I give you five. I give you five.
Yeah.
You ain't sleeping. The kids, the baby don't know you. The husband forgot the last name.
I'm just trying to say. Like, our schedules are literally passing. Sometimes that work out because you know us women, we could drive y'all crazy, and y'all ain't too shy of driving us crazy neither.
Oh, no, we're not. I drive mine crazy in a minute.
I know that's right.
Well, Mina, it was an honor having you on. I didn't realize what time it was. It was an honor having you on. And you know you're welcome back anytime.
Y'all come to Major Mink.
Oh, sure.
I need to, like, I'm going to talk to Lavina when I'm done. Like, this can't go one way. I definitely gotta show y'all some love. Y'all some love. Lavina's been following me for quite some time, and I've been following y'all back, just watching y'all movement, and I'm truly, truly blessed to even be a part and to be considered.
Okay. That's not a problem.
So, world, y'all heard it. GQ, Major Mink Radio, all in one place. This is gonna be history.
Yes, it's definitely going to be history.
But thank y'all so much.
Would you like to give the information to the listeners and everything? You know,
yes.
The web, the Twitter, give
if
them everything.
If you are looking for the kid, I'm somewhere working. No, I'm joking. Facebook is I am Miss Mink, MSMINC. Twitter is Miss Mink 1, MSMINC 1. Or at Major Mink Radio. My email is MajorMinkRadio@gmail.com if that's for the radio show. If it's for other business, it's MinkPro, MINCPRO, @gmail.com. The website is MajorMinkRadio.com. You're going to find me, that's for sure.
You gonna find me.
Wow. Is there but any thank- shout outs you want to give?
I'm pretty sure shout out.
You got that big team. You got to get shout out.
Shout out to Studio Bug, that is the president of BX Records, who just holds the vision down and keeps us in line for the most part. Make sure that we focus. Shout out to the artists who have just worked with us diligently, KF Hawks, St. Raymond, Junes, Gems, Nevs, my boy David L., who's a great, great author, my boy Chase, I said Catherine Hawks, Stillion, Mike Major, Fusions, Bar and Grill, DWI Studios, Nightline Studios, everybody who just holds us down and makes sure that we continue to stay on our grind.
All right. And like I said, it was definitely an honor bringing you
thanks.
On. And like you said, you're going to get in touch with Lavina?
Yes,
get in touch
I'm
going to
get it. I'm going to get in touch with her, and before this summer's out, we all going to be on the air together.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, world, pay attention.
Uh-huh, it's going down big.
Yes, thank you so much, Rich.
Thank you, Mina.
All right, sweetheart.
All right.
Bye.
Mina Long, Gods and Divas. Coming up next. Author David L. So stay right there. Don't move. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
Ricky Rose. There's something special right here. Excuse the marijuana. Just trying to enjoy myself. We got some gangsters in the house, too. Come on.
Or the new white BM home from FAMU with a gorgeous face. Next semester she transferred to Florida State. Cooking like home ec for financial aid. I hella doubt she had problems with financial aid. Remember, meantime my finance is straight. I even opened up the door to the financial state. She used to fight with her mom till I sat them both down. Now she tight with her mom. Yeah, I put the ice on her arm. Now she know she getting sliced, spend the night in Milan. Still blow weed together. Cheated on her, but we still gon' be together. Put the house on the water, hit the beach whenever. She from the north and still can't believe the weather.
I got a bunch of dollars, I can spend them on her. So she can be my lady, she can be my lover. Tell me on a late night, get right here.
For that other when you got the best. The previous was a test for you, now you're in the big league. A black sign, Brenner, who wouldn't want to play for me? Your last man was a chump, and you can tell him I said it. He was talking loud at first, but you can see that he did it. You can see I ain't sweating. Hell, I call him up myself and tell him I ain't get it. No, please, don't confuse me, miss. I'm trying to see how I can put you on my Christmas list. I hope you ain't offended by this, but I think your ass fine as shit. And that's straight up real talk. All bullshit aside, she replied, I like to do the wild thing. Place at my place, not my place, it's her place. Yeah.
I got a bunch of dollars, I can spend them all on her. So she can be my lady, she can be my lover. Tell me on a late night, get right here, ain't acting right. You're a superwoman, need a superman. Yeah, I am.
Mo better, Mo cheddar. Knock the man off your clothesline sweater. Ho getter, gorilla. Fuck chauffeurs, I went and got more killers. I rock with niggas like Fabulous. Cause to tell the truth, baby, life fabulous. But you make it look glamorous. Your spaghetti strap heels, not for amateurs. Wrist quite rocky, talk like Foxy. Job like Roxy, fuck that broccoli. Walk quite Aki, that means sexy. I will save you, if you let me. Fly with me, get high as me. A lot of alphabets, girl, I'm a G. Time will tell, Rolex watches. We show stoppers, hoes just watching.
I got a bunch of dollars, I can spend them on her. So she can be my lady, she can be my lover. Tell me on a late night, get right here. Superwoman needs a superman. Here I am.
right, Dons and Divas, welcome back to the palace. And with me right now, I have author David L. David, welcome to the show. D, what's going on? What's going on?
What's going on? What's happening?
I can't call it. I might spoil it. No?
Hey, trying to survive this heat.
I hear you. I feel you. You know, you are like a successful author right now. You know, you got big things going on. You got 4 novels out. You know, you had your book signing. You know, now is being an author something you always wanted to be?
I mean, shoot, growing up, pretty much, I mean, every kid in the block, they wanted to either be a ball player or, you know, a football player of some sort or, you know, whatever, basically, as far as the common theme of what everybody wanted to be. So being an author, technically, no, that's not something that at 10, 15, you know, 20, even 20 years of age, I could say, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, I want to be an author one day. That pretty much came to be because, you know, I'm like one of those typical people where, you know, I go to the movies, I'll see a movie, I won't particularly care for the ending or, you know, there'll be certain parts, elements of the movie that I can say to myself as far as, you know what, they could have done that differently. They should have did this or had this, you know, actor play this part. And my whole thing was, you know, always, I was always an agent of change. My whole thing was always, you know what, if I could put something else out, instead of just complaining about whoever did it, let me do it myself and then put my own spin to it as far as what I want to see happen.
Okay. Now, like you said, it ain't something that you always wanted to be as being an author. But if you could work with any author, who would it be and why?
Oh, man. I mean, if I could work with any author.
Any author. We're talking about
I mean, it would be mm-hmm. someone that I felt could, you know, compel me to, like, even take it to the next level. It wouldn't be any contemporary author. You know, nothing against anybody that's out now or relevant or even remotely recent, but it would be somebody from back in the day like an Elijah Muhammad or Malcolm X. Somebody that, you know, can drive me, you know, as far as my writing style to go even further and further. And I hold me back as far as making me stagnate because there's nothing out relevant right now going on. So it would be someone like a Malcolm X or Elijah Muhammad.
Okay, somebody who actually also experienced the true culture and everything like that. I mean, who you looking for, but it had to be another author.
Definitely, because, I mean, my whole thing was always, you know, to this day and always, even historically, not to just put something out because it sounds good. I mean, it's got to be interesting, yes, definitely, from a marketing standpoint. But I've always been one to want to put something out because, number one, maybe it didn't happen yet, or because, again, I want to put my own spin to it as far as just something that's unique and something that, you know, people really haven't seen yet, you know, through my vision.
Oh, okay. Now, when you write in your novel, let's say your novel, My Life is Like a Movie, when naming your characters, do you give any thought to the actual meaning of the characters?
The ironic thing about, like, when I name a character, naming a character has got to be top 5. Not that it's difficult in any type of way, but it's something that I definitely put time to because I don't want to just give a character, you know, any old random name. I mean, I'm big on, you know, a name, you know, fits, you know, a certain person or a certain quality of an individual. You know, black people from, you know, even from the slavery days, you know, they inherited, you know, they adopted their slave master's last name. So really the only thing we ever had going for us was our first name. So, you know, my whole thing with a name pretty much, you know, even from a cultural standpoint, it was always something that I gave great thought because I wanted to make sure that I put out something that, you know, again, is unique. So, you know, a name, as far as the character, that name's got to, you know, stand the test of time. So I got to make sure that I put down something that's not just basic or average. And there's nothing wrong with that basic or average name. I mean, David is a very common average name. But at the end of the day, again, you know, I want to put my own little flavor or spin to a, you know, person's unique characteristic. And a name is a unique characteristic of somebody.
Exactly. Just to make the person, when they read it, just have that character in their head, like, I can't believe this character is such and such.
Definitely.
That's understandable. Now, what's your favorite part of a novel?
My favorite part of a novel which I've written?
Yes.
Again, because of my writing style, I'm very hard on myself. as far as, you know, attracting a reader, my objective is making sure that from page one, I keep them glued, because the average reader, especially an avid reader, if there's some gaps in the book as far as, you know, action sequences, that individual, unless they've been following you for a long time and they know, you know, through a test of time that it's going to pick up at any moment, that person, if they're reading you for the first time, they may put the book down. And history shows that usually when someone puts a book down, they rarely pick it up again. And, you know, at this stage of my career, I can't afford that. I got to make sure that any reader that picks up my book, it's just either nonstop or they may have got caught up with something that they had to do and they're looking forward to it. You know, again, when they have that moment of time in which they can pick up the book and recapture what they've been reading from previous. So as far as my favorite part of the book, I mean, honestly, not to sound cliche, it's from beginning to end, because I got to make sure that I keep the readers, you know, glued to those pages. I can't afford any lapses in action.
Okay.
My intro page is like, bam, in your face. I have to be that way. My intro can't just, you know, just lag. You may never make it to chapter one or two of one of my books, and then I'm done. My career is over, you know, in your
exactly.
eyes.
Exactly. So that chapter, you got to catch them as soon as they open up that book.
Definitely.
Intro and everything.
And the ending, I mean, I can't put out a good book, and then, you know, the last few pages lagged, and then you're like, okay, wow, it was a great book, but the ending just, you know, left me upset. The only time, you know, someone will say, wow, okay, you know what, I'm kind of pissed off at you, is because, boom, they want a sequel, like, right away. They can't understand that, you know, it's a process. It's not just something that comes out the next day or the next week. So, if anything, as far as from a criticism standpoint, it's more or less the reader just wanting that next sequel, like, right away. Because if you do an ending, depending on the type of ending you do, if you leave room, if you leave any type of margin of error for a sequel, they're demanding it. If the book is good, and you know, for the most part, if they're telling you that they're looking forward to the sequel, you know you did your job.
Okay, exactly. I definitely believe that one. If it's the kind of person that's looking for a sequel and they're stuck, the book is definitely going to places. Now, let's talk about another one of your novels real fast. My Life is Like a Movie.
My Life is a Movie, definitely.
What made you name it that specific title? Tell us a little bit about it.
I definitely will. And, I mean, the ironic thing is, I know we're talking about My Life as a Movie now, but every book that I've put out, the title itself is, again, probably top three most difficult processes for me. Just the title itself. So, I mean, I want the reader to really understand that title isn't just some old made-up title or, you know, the title of a hip-hop song. And I'm like, my attitude is, you know what, that's a great song for my favorite artist. Let me just throw that on the, you know, on the cover of my book. That's not my style. But as far as My Life as a Movie, I mean, My Life as a Movie is that coming-of-age storyline. As far as, you know, I don't know what your readers' ages are, but anyone who can remember and appreciate a movie like Coolie High, you know, anyone that can appreciate a movie like, you know, Do the Right Thing, especially a movie like Take the Wood. You know, that's a movie. It's a coming-of-age story in which, you know, it takes you back into time as far as, you know, your own growing-up, you know, era, you know, from your own, you know, teenage era, and it's going through the trials and tribulations of growing up, you know, attending your prom, you know, cutting school to smoke a cigarette, you know, in the back of your, you know, your mama's house, you know, opening up that fire hydrant and, you know, hitting a car of eggs and then taking off down the block. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, so, you know, everything from the 10-cent payphone to beepers, you know, that's my era. So, you know, I took it back with My Life as a Movie. And the thing about My Life as a Movie, I was able to capture an entire audience of new readers, because a lot of the youth now, they're doing all the stuff that I did back in the day anyway, with the hairstyles, how they wear their clothes. You know, we used to straighten leg our pants back in the day. I mean, I'm not built for, you know, what I see now is totally different, but, you know, that's a different story for a different day. But, you know, the clothes, the hairstyles, they're all doing, even the slang, like they're saying and doing a lot of stuff that, you know, I did back in my teenage era. So, you know, I'm seeing it come, you know, and I'm seeing it, you know, do a complete 360 as far as, wow, okay, I remember this. Like, this is my era right now, back, deja vu. So those young readers that can appreciate a good book, they're going to love My Life as a Movie. People my age, you know, people with kids, you know, they're going to be like, boom, okay, after they read this book, they're going to be like, you know, I love this. Wow, it really took me back to a certain era of life. And it's written in a way where, you know, you could give it and hand it over to your 15, 16-year-old, you know, son, niece, you know, godchild, whatever, because, you know, I'm not a big writer on, you know, profanity and, you know, having a profanity-based tirade in the course of a book. My books, you know, especially like My Life as a Movie, you can count the number of, you know, curse words on one hand. That's just my style of writing.
Okay.
So my life in the movie, you know, to go back to the question, my life in the movie is pretty much, it's you know, entering the world of Kayla Brown, who's the main character or one of the main characters of the book, and she's again going through those trials and tribulations of a typical teenager. And basically her storyline can be very identical to someone that's reading it. So my life in the movie symbolizes, wow, okay, you know what? I'm watching this television show, or I'm watching this movie right now, and you know what? A lot of what's going on right now, I can appreciate this. Like, I can live this right now. I can play that role. So my life in the movie is very symbolic as far as, you know, my way of saying, okay, you know what? If I put you in this role right now, if I turn you into Kayla Brown and stick you in a cover and give you some lines to memorize, you can play this role.
Okay. Now, did you self-publish your novels, or do you go with a publishing company?
I did a little bit of both. And what I mean by that is, my life as a movie, was one time called, people can Google it. It was one time called It's Like Butter, Baby. I won't mention the publishing company because there's still some legal issues with that. However, my book was published, you know, through a Canadian publishing imprint. I didn't like the direction of where the book was going, as far as from the artwork to how it was being edited to a whole host of different things. So what I did was, you know, I got out of the contract, you know, through some legal maneuvering, I got out of the contract, and I said to myself, you know what, I'm not, you know, down for the okie dokes. What I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to reach out, contact some conventional, you know, agents, some publishers, and get it out there. So, you know, you'll be in all the brick-and-mortar bookstores. So my life is a movie, which, of course, at one point was formerly known as It's Like Butter, Baby. I already had that out there. And it ended up being re-released as My Life is a Movie. But while I was doing that, I was also working on my first officially published book through my publishing imprint, Total Package Publications, which is Over Your Dead Body. Now, I shopped Over Your Dead Body to a whole gang of agents, publishers, you know, various individuals in the literary world. Everyone pretty much blew me off. And, I mean, even to this day, I got all my rejection letters. So what I did was, I said, you know what, no one wants to put it out, I'm going to put it out myself. So I put out Over Your Dead Body, you know, to lukewarm reception. 7 months went by, and I kept pushing, I kept striving, I knew it was good product, so I kept, you know, I was out there, you know, hustling, started moving units. My original movie deal was for Over Your Dead Body, and which then ended up turning into Unrepresent, which is a later story. But after Over Your Dead Body came out, and I started being, you know, introduced by the same people that was blowing me off, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to do it and keep all my books under my own publisher imprint. This way I can put out my own product, do it the way I need to do it, how I think it needs to be done, and at the same time put out other authors.
Okay, so you took that next step to move it up to another level.
Definitely.
All right. Now, how have your personal experience affected your writing?
Well, my personal experience affected my writing because pretty much, again, I knew from, you know, even from a very, you know, early start, because I was competing with so many, you know, individuals that was already in the industry, you know, at one point my writing, which I ended up, you know, sending it to, you know, my editor, pretty much my writing was pretty much targeting individuals that, you know, I could relate to, you know, individuals that I probably saw every day, you know, growing up, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. You know, I saw, you know, a wealth of African-American, you know, individuals. So my book was catered probably towards that. And whereas now it may more or less probably still be catered towards, you know, because those are the majority of my readers, those are the ones that are my supporters that hold me down, especially, you know, black women. I love them because definitely I wouldn't have a publishing company without them. They definitely hold me down. Percentage-wise, my sales of African-American women are 85%. So as far as my writing style, I had to make sure that whether, you know, the main character was male, female, black, white, you know, whatever, I had to make sure that, you know, everyone could relate to the storyline itself. Even though the character or the genre, you know, the whole urban lit thing, which I'm not really a fan of that word anyway, but I had to make sure that I could market my writing, market my material to everyone, and not just, you know, put myself in a glass box in which I'm just targeting, you know, whether it's women, men, black, white, whatever. I had my own writing become mainstream. So, you know, to this day, you know, it was successful because I present my latest book. We got the movie deal.
Okay. Now, excuse me. If I was an up-and-coming author, what advice can you give me if I ran out of creativity?
could I do some signings? Actually, I always have a wealth of authors coming. You know, they want to work on books, or they may already have a book, so they want to send me a manuscript. One of the questions that's always asked is typical of what you just asked. Is pretty much, you know, what do I need to do to become successful or to become more successful? And my words of wisdom is always pretty much the same. It's, you know, treat your fan base, not only like to use the word fan, but, you know, treat your readers, you know, with respect, and realize from an early stage of your career that, you know, these are the people that's going to make or break you. You know, you can't be that cocky, you know, clown who, after a wave of success, you start blowing off people that put you there in the first place. And it becomes very easy. I mean, there's that whole concept of here now, going tomorrow. A lot of people are going through it. People are going through it right now. And part of the problem is because, number one, they're not putting out relevant product as far as their books. That's number one. Number two is because they've lost some type of, you know, relationship with their readers. Now, me, I'm very, you know, interactive, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever. People that hold me down, you know, trust. It's not just where, you know, someone purchases, you know, goes to a website and purches a book. It's pretty much me reaching out. You know, when books get mailed out, that's me actually, you know, autographing a book. That's me going to the post office and mailing it out. And I think, you know, with new writers, they've lost that grasp on, let me connect with the reader. That's the person that's holding me down. So you have to take care of that reader. You take care of that reader's going to take care of you. So you'll never lose, you know, vision in that.
Okay. Okay, I forgot you. Now, let's talk about another one of your novels, Over Your Dead Body.
Now, Over Your Dead Body.
That's a unique title. What made you name that novel, that title? And how long did it actually take you to write that novel?
I chuckle because you're one of the few people that actually read that title correct. It's funny because people are so used to hearing the slogan, you know, over her dead body or over my dead body. But it's over your dead body, because, again, the symbolism behind that is, nah, it's not over my dead body. Nah, bro, that's over your dead body.
And that's what makes it so unique.
You do this to me, you do that? Nah, it's going to be your dead body, not mine. And the whole concept behind that is, Preston and Janelle, their husband and wife, the concept of the book and the storyline is pretty much such as the book begins with, you know, they're happily married, you know, you might as well call them the Huxtables. And then, of course, chapter through chapter, it's that whole declining spiral of, you know, we went from happily married to we can really look at each other to by the time you get halfway through the book, without giving away too much, they basically want to kill each other. So the concept of only in their body is that whole line of, you know what, once you get somebody to that point where there's no turning back, that person is capable of doing whatever. And I'm very psychological in all of my books. So I like to, like, tackle that whole concept of what can you do to me? Well, what can I do to some, you know, to somebody? Part of that concept of, you know what? You harmed my children. You did this. You did that. Like, you can take any mild mannered individual and get them to the point where they're in attack mode. It's the concept of the most docile creature. You capture or not capture, but if you surround a bunny rabbit, and that bunny rabbit is up against a wall, their natural, you know, inclination is to fight back. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So if over your dead body, it's, you know what, you did this to me, oh, it's on now.
Okay. So that's more like, would you say, like an action novel?
Yeah, Over Your Dead Body, for me to, like, give it my own personal interpretation of the subject matter, I would have to say Over Your Dead Body is definitely that, you know, that drama, family, fiction, suspense type of, you know, novel. But action is definitely, you know, part of anything of how I would describe any of my books. It's definitely suspense drama.
Okay. What would you say is the hardest part of writing a novel?
The hardest part of writing?
Yeah.
The hardest part of writing is sometimes, well, I mean, I don't know as far as the average writer. I can't, you know, speak for them for obvious reasons, but sometimes the hardest part of writing is getting into the mind of one of my characters. It's kind of like an actor, which I'm not, but I will be for the movie because I have one line. But, you know, an actor is like pretty much, okay, you have to play this part, you know, whereas normally, you know, you're this type of person, but now you got to play this type of person. So, you know, I salute them because it's harder, you know, what it seems like. And as far as, you know, my writing style, if there's a part of the book where this character has to, like, cause bodily harm to someone else, or they got to do this, or, you know, whatever storyline calls for, I like to write. Like, I'm a, there's a a word for it that actors, method actors or something. I'm going to call myself, you know, an abstract method writer. I need to write this down. That could be my new alias. But pretty much, like, what I like to do is, if it's like a really, like, enraged scene of the book, I would like to prefer to be in some type of, you know, emotion where I'm actually a little pissed off at somebody. And I could allow my writing to grow. I don't want to be in a good mood and I have to write a scene in the book where I'm killing somebody. That kind of takes away from my writing. So I may put the book down for a few days or a few weeks until I'm kind of pissed off, and then I can write that part of the book and then just knock it out in like 10, 15 minutes. So for me, that's probably the hardest part. Sometimes there's gaps in my writing because there's a part of the book that calls for a certain emotion. So I may just wait it out.
Okay. Now you also have a movie deal going on. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm in a movie deal. I'm not going to take 100% credit for it because I was doing a book signing. And actually, the funny thing with the book signing and the movie deal is pretty much with anything. I mean, a lot of people, they talk just to talk, or I don't know if it's because they want to, like, just talk to make themselves sound good. But I've heard everything from movie deals to, you know, we're going to do this with your book, turn into a play, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what it sounds like, blah, blah, blah. So I've heard it so much that really until you show me some type of substance, I really don't pay no mind. And the lady that contacted me, again, because the original deal was for Over Your Dead Body, the way she used to reach out to me was, like, in six-month increments. So she would reach out to me. She would, like, you know, draft up a contract. She would email it to me. I would look it over. I'd get kind of excited. I'd have my legal team, well, not my legal team, my lawyer look it over. I only got one lawyer. I don't have a team, a lawyer. I'd send it to my lawyer. They'd look it over. I wouldn't hear back from her for 6 months. So then I'm like, okay, whatever. So then all the emotions that I had was, like, just turned off. 6 months would go by, I get a little hyped again. Everything seems to be moving the way it needs to be moving. 6 months later, you know, I'm hearing from her again. So this process took like a 2-year process. This actually transpired through a course of about 2 years. And then once I realized that they were serious, well, they flew me out to Cali. You know, they actually showed me like parts of where, you know, they were going to be acting. They hired, they actually introduced me to people that was hired. And then we were in litigation for about 6 more months because there was some discrepancy as far as where it's going to be filmed. Represent, which the storyline takes place, well, the majority of it, I would say, Brooklyn, New York. I wanted the movie to be based, you know, in Brooklyn, New York for obvious reasons. They said, well, you know what, we have props in California. We can recreate Brooklyn, California. That's just going to cost us more money. They're an upstart company. So they said, well, you know what, we're going to do everything in California. So we went back and forth. For 6 months to argue. So we ended up compromising for a 50-50 split between locations. So, I mean, the seriousness level took off when they started flying me out more often. Contracts were going back and forth between my lawyer and their lawyer. And then, I mean, right now we can seem to be moving. Right now, my only thing is tentative dates for when they start filming. You know, it's been changed so many times that now, you know, I talk about it because I know it's out there. You know, checks were cashed. So I know that there's some, you know, I know there's some seriousness behind it. But right now, you know, I'm here in summer of 2013, so, you know, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best on that. You know, sometimes it does happen like that. But in the long run, it wound up being the best thing. You know, just like I was informed, you know, just to give you a little information, when we had Grand Pooba on, he informed us about Chris Rock, how he kept getting booed on comedy. I mean, he got booed so many times, he was saying it was ridiculous, but look at him now.
Right.
You know? So, now, if you was writing a novel based on your life, what would the title be?
Oh, man. All right. If I was writing a novel based on my life, the title.
Based on your life.
All right. You caught me with a left hook with that. Let me think for a second. all right. I'm going to go with, all right, based on my life. Title. All right, let me freestyle this. All right, I'm going to go with, all right, Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
I like that. Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Okay. Now, let me ask you, what's the best thing about being an author?
Best thing about being an author is the random email. Because when you write and people from all over got your books, I mean, I'm not saying I'm international or anything like that, but, you know, my books are throughout 50 states that I know of. I mean, they're out there in different countries, but, I mean, I know for a fact that they're out there in all 50 states. And because all 50 states carry, you know, certain, you know, time zones, like, I know we're in East, I'm in Eastern, you know, Standard Time, but you got people Mountain Central, whatever. So the best feeling, honestly, for me is that random moment where it might be 2 o'clock in the morning and I keep my phone next to me at all times. I'm looking at my phone, there's a slight beep. I'm like, okay, boom, I got an email. I look at the email, and it's a satisfied reader who felt it necessary to hit me with an email saying, I love your book. I'm a little upset with you because I stayed up all night reading it, and I was late for work the next morning. And the email came in at like 2 something in the morning. Cause I honestly save those emails because it keeps me humble. It lets me know that, okay, you know what, even with all the drawbacks, the obstacles, the roadblocks, there's one person out in Montana that's feeling me right now, and I don't ever take it for granted because that person that's feeling me right now can blow me off tomorrow. I know that with my next book. You're only as good as your last book.
Mm.
And Represent is my latest book right now. So if I don't come in that next, you know, blockbuster, that next banger, the 4 books that I put out that people fell in love with, they're going to be like, okay, but that 5th book, it was you know what? He's falling off. Not David's 4 for 5, which is a hell of a batting average. The average person is going to say, damn, he's falling off. So that's pressure. And I know pressure builds diamonds and all that other good stuff. And, you know, but you know what? I can't afford that. So I got to come with a banger every time. I got to come out swinging every time.
Mm. But in kind of late. Let me ask you this question real fast. What kind of research did you do for your novels?
Research I do for every single book. I don't want anyone to take for granted that I just pick up a pen and start writing. There's no way that I would even put out that type of message. And as far as research, I did my most research with a book that we haven't even talked about yet, Chalk Outline Confession. That's a psychological thriller. It's about a black female serial killer. Now, the only thing that I have in common with that is that I'm black. That's it. I'm not a serial killer, allegedly, and I'm not female, definitely. So what I had to do with that was I researched. I talked to women. I talked to women of all ages, cultures, backgrounds, legal situations, and I put everything together. I would take notes, and I would say, well, what would you do in this situation? Well, how would you react to this? What would be your response to this right here? So, because the main character is a female, and not only is she out there, you know, killing men, leading double lives, she's got OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which is, you know, a clinical sickness. She, you know, she's a clean freak, pretty much. So, you know, she's out there and she's doing her thing. You got FBI looking for her, and she's basically playing a mind game with them. Every time they get closer, she draws them in, and then she steps out. So, but halfway through the book, she's like, you know what, you can't catch me anyway, and she starts actually leaving little hints all over the place, trying to draw them in. So it was like a whole game of cat and mouse. And in order to do that and get into the mind of Francine Stiles, who's the main character, I had to do research. I did research for every book. So I really want, you know, the listener or the listeners to understand the impact of what it means to do research for a book. You have to put out something that, you know, that's valid, that's factual. You know, I can't say in the course of a book, you know, Boise, Idaho is 216 miles away from Little Rock, Arkansas, and it's not. Because, trust me, someone out there who knows that that's not true, they're going to call me on it. I can't have that.
Mm. Okay. Now, like you said, you had your book signing in the Bronx. You know, do you have any more book signings coming up anytime soon?
Yeah. Well, my last book signing was in the Bronx, which was convenient because, you know, I'm from Brooklyn. But, I mean, for the most part, the majority of my signings are out of state. You know, I hit Delaware, Philly, and I just keep going traveling. I don't do much in New York. So my next signings coming up, my next signings actually for the month of July are all book club related. I love visiting book clubs. Any book clubs out there, any book club members, call me. I'm there. I got you. Just, you know, talk with me, talk to my publicist. Let's try to work it out, but I'm there. All you got to do, hey, wherever we're meeting up at, if it's a public place or someone's home, get at me. Just make sure that there's no pork on my plate. I don't eat no pork. Have the food waiting for me, I'm there. I got you. Because that's my favorite place to do a signing. Book club members, if they're feeling you, they love you. They feel you forever. A book club member or members are like surrogate mothers. They'll hold you down to the end. And as far as that, you know, I'm going to keep doing that. And then as far as my actual signing, I got some signings coming to Philly. I'll be in Philly actually the first week of August and the last week of August. And then I will be in Maryland and Delaware in between that, and then after that, I'm like going further south for like September on. But I'm definitely trying to hit every southern state before the end of the year. And if people go to my website, www.totalpackagepublication.com, and add their name, you know, to my email list, I don't do that spam mail thing. What I do is once a month, I shoot out an email of what's coming up, what I'm doing, what I got going on, and I give away a $25 gift card every month to one, you know, lucky recipient.
Okay. Now, you know, Sister Gabriel, what I want you to do is give the listeners all your information, the Twitter, you got that, your webpage, your Facebook, let them know where they can buy your book and everything, how they get it. Let them know everything.
Definitely. Anyone who's read any of my books, I recommend, or actually I suggest and ask that, you know, boom, you go to Amazon.com, post a review. I'm not going to say positive or negative because I'm going to take it for granted. Hey, I hate to say it, but if you read one of my books, you're going to love it anyway, so it's going to be a positive review. Do a review on Amazon.com. Hold me down that way. You know, you can email me any thoughts of, you know, what, why I did something with a certain book or how I treated a certain character. Like I said before, I'm interactive. I didn't just say it because it sounded like a cool thing to say. You email me, there's no in-between people emailing you back. I'm emailing you myself. So you can get at me my personal email, the author, DavidL@hotmail.com. My Facebook, well, the email for my Facebook, because I know you can search that way, is the author, DavidL@hotmail.com. Put that in, and then, you know, my Facebook information will come up. My Facebook name is author David L. I'm at Almighty David L. That's my Twitter name, Almighty David L. A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y David L. You can get on me at, I think I got Skype. I got to talk to my publisher about that. If I do, I don't know how to use it. And every other, you know, thing out there, as far as from a social networking type of thing, you know, get at me. I'm on Goodreads, you know, again, Nook, Kindle, you know, my e-books, you know, they're out there. I don't particularly care for e-books, but for those that do, it's on there. $2.99 a book. I say, personally, get the hardcover or the soft cover. I can mail to you, write something nice in there, and send it up to you myself, and you know, get at me that way. But again, I look forward to all emails. I respond to all emails. I got an iPhone. You trust, if I get an email from you, I'm responding within the next couple of hours. And if I'm on the road, that's why it's going to take so long. If I'm somewhere where I'm not driving or I got that moment of time where I can respond, that's what's happening. I got you.
Right. Is there any shout-outs you want to give,
I want to shout-out myself because I'm a hell of a writer. I want to shout-out Sharmina. She holds me down from a publicity standpoint. She does some stuff. She gets me some signings here and there. Great publicist. Anybody who don't know will get to know her in the literary world. My editor, Carla Dean. She's tough, but that's what I need. If I put together a couple of paragraphs of like real average work, she's going to hit me back and be like, all right, you need to change this up. That's what I need. I don't need no yes men in my camp. I need someone else to say, all right, boom, you need to change that up. So shout out to Carla. Shout out to, you know, all the authors out there that, you know, I collaborate with. We do stuff together. Too many to name, but they know who they are. Especially if they're listening right now, that just goes to show that, you know, they're supporting anyway. All my Facebook followers, again, most of my Facebook followers are people that held me down with the books, because every time I do a book signing, I try to get everyone that's on Facebook their email, and then I'll add and become friends with them on Facebook, because I'm a character on Facebook. Anybody who knows me knows that. I'll just drop some random stuff on there. I also want to give a shout-out to editor-in-chief of the upcoming magazine. Check it out. It's called Urban Grapevine. Look it up. Google it. First issue, I think it's going to be out like August 1st. Can't tell you, I got the cover story. Hey, you know, it is what it is. Can't tell you who I interview. You know, that's a hush-hush little secret right now, but you will know in the next, you know, several weeks. And it's called, again, Urban Grapevine. Look out for that. It's going to be a featured columnist on that. Name of my column is David L. for President. So check that out. Urban Grapevine. Be in the mood for that. That's going to blow up. Right? I'm right there. During the blow-up phase of that.
All right. David, I really want to thank you for joining us this evening. You know, you're welcome anytime. You know, look for your stuff and, you know, the information, everything, so we can throw you in the GQ Palace magazine and all that. But it was definitely an honor having you on.
Thanks for having me. Definitely an honor to be on the show. I'm looking forward to once again being on it. And hopefully, you know, by the time that movie drops, hey, you know, I have some premiere tickets for you. Just want to leave everybody out there listening. You know, anyone out there listening, thank you for listening in. You know, get at me. I'm interactive. I'm here. I'm not that dude that's just like You got to go through 3 and 4 people to get to. I'm here. Right. Just spell my name right.
Alright. David L. Dons and Divas. That's it for tonight's show. I want to thank all my guests. I want to thank you, all the listeners. I want to thank the callers. But most of all, I want to thank the man above, because without him, none of this would be possible. I want to give a shout out to Ace of Diamonds Jewelry Store at 2 West Fordham Road, Bronx, New York. Reasonable prices for that ice. So check them out. Ace of Diamonds, Jewelry, 2 West Fordham Road, New York. Tell them Rich Money from GQ Palace Radio sent you. I'm your host once again, Rich Money. Have a safe and blessed weekend. This is GQ Palace, love and entertainment, where the dreams come true. It's butter, baby. Peace.
Yo, you know every time you come home, you got to merch something.
Stop! It's the motherfucking remix!
Yeah, Harlem is back. Who in the world want a problem with that? I'm on real. I heard Harlem is back.
You know we had to do
it. Who in the world want a problem with that? Yeah, Harlem is back. Who in the world want a problem with that? I'm on real. I heard Harlem is back.
You know we had to do
it. Who in the world want a problem with that?
I said my niggas don't dance. We just pull up a PMS. Do the rock away. Now lean back. Lean back. Lean back. Lean back, come on. I said my niggas don't dance. We just pull up our pants and do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back. Lean back,
yo,
lean back,
yo,
come on.
You know it's deja vu and the day y'all do. It'll be the day y'all bleed. Rich minus 80 degrees. King of Harlem, ain't nobody made me leave. Who else could take 5 years off? Cold turkey, come back and fly lids off. Cats front, leave them leaning like Smirnoff. If haters wanna hate, then it's their loss. Come up in the rucker with all my jigs on. Clock grill so big, you can cook a steak on. People hear mace gone, wanna get their mace on. You a hot 16, I'm a very great song. They beating on the DJ before the mace song. You play Clock King, you better have your cape on. Plenty goons, mansion, mini room. My necklace, 2 X's and 3 Benny Booms. Lean back, and lean back. Cause he's back, come on. Lean back, lean back. Lean back, just ease back, come on.
You don't want them problems with Harlem. You don't want the problems with the boogie down Bronxster. You don't want the drama with the blonde bomber. Original Don Dada of the blonde bottle. The model for white America, Denzel. This folks person for the Latino. Then we got made back to reveries and everything else in between, including the percentages of the rest we don't. The best from East Coast to Midwest to the dirty, dirty. Even further to Miami, all the way back to California. It'd probably be best right now if I won Dre. Get on the horn with him, tell him about the storm coming all our way. So tell a pal, grab a gal right now, get on the floor while I wait. Shake that ass a little more my way. But baby, I don't dance, not that I can't. There's a pistol in my pants, come on. My niggas don't dance, we just pull up a PMS. Do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back, lean back. Lean back, come on. I said my niggas don't dance, we just pull up our pants and do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back. Lean back.
Hey, yo, Remy pop, but I'm hot, like an out of state spot. And anybody think I'm not, you found in the vacant lot. You don't really wanna run with the one chick who smoke Dutchess for lunches. The Castle Hill, I ain't hung chick. Now the arrow for the terror squad. Fun prospect, sunshine, Getty crack, and Remy Ma. It's not a chick in this game, want it. My 15 so mean, put 20 G's in my chain on it. Quick to flip, I ain't the average chick. I'm packing a Mac in the back of the 45 past 6. And you know I got enough goons to crush the country. Any dudes disrespecting pun, he better plan to run see you. Bring your mans and then we handle them. Then we go on Timberland, trample them. Then we pull a cans on them. Lean back, cause I ain't never worried. See, I'm for every glory smacking up any chick in my territory.
Except my niggas don't dance, we just pull up a PMS. Do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back, lean back. Lean back, come on. I said my niggas don't dance, we just pull up a PMS. Do the rock away. Now lean back. Lean back, lean back, lean back, come on. No
Judas a Commodus, the king's brother Abel is able to stop me, nigga, not me. Got the streets asking, damn, who could stop he? Summer Jam killed it, man, and did it all with one beat. I guess I'm by coastal now. Took a damn South brother to bring your boy out.
What? What?
As the wheel keeps spinning, I can hear niggas thinking crack at one hit, then he out. Nope, Joey bring them semis out. Force you and yours, ball little Henny out. With so much rappers acting in the game, I had to tell him put the mic away and run and go and get your Emmys out. Lean back, motherfucker, this here's a three-peat, we back at the rucker. It's good, joke, crack, preach it to your brother, the mic, more rap, and peace to your motherfucker. Think my niggas don't dance, we just pull up a PS and do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back, lean back, lean back, come on. I said my niggas don't dance, we just pull up a PS and do the rock away. Now lean back, lean back, lean back, lean back, come on.